to the meeting, and thank you for your attendance this evening. It's our regular meeting. We meet on Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. But I will not keep the colleagues from AMSCO, the colleagues from DINER, as well as the Minister of Public Enterprises right until 9 o'clock. They will be excused as soon as they will be in a position to leave as soon as we have finished discussion on item number 3. Yeah. On the presentation by AMSCO and DINER on 1, the protection of sovereign technology intellectual property.
Recording in progress.
2, commercialization or industrialization of the A-Data missile systems and the impact on the SA Air Force. And 3, the capacity of DINER to continue existing service contracts with the South African Defense Force. After that, we'll then deal with the issue, the report on allegations that the SNDF soldiers deployed in Mozambique had their food poisoning. The colleagues will recall that upon receiving a brief report from the Chief of Joint Operations, we requested the Minister to ask the Ombuds to investigate, to launch an investigation into this allegation. So without an independent body like an Ombuds, will give us an objective report on the allegation of food poisoning. So the SNDF will then give us just the status of this investigation. And then the next item is the consideration of letters from the President on the deployment of the South African Defense Force under Operation Prosper. SECDEF, I'm aware that we have renewed the deployment to Mozambique, if I'm not mistaken. And we have not received that letter. So I would expect you, SECDEF, just to comment on that or any other deployment or renewed deployment that you may be aware of and we have not received any information from your office. And then number 6, we'll then look at our own annual performance plan. And then lastly, we'll consider and adopt the minutes. So let's look at the apologies. I have a letter from the ministry indicating that the minister will not be in the meeting. The Minister of Defense and Military Veterans will not be in the meeting today owing to another pressing commitment that she had to honor this evening. However, she delegated the Secretary for Defense to lead the team and then introduce the issues for tonight. We also received an apology from the Deputy Minister of Defence and Military Veterans, who's also held up because he has another engagement at the same time as this one. However, as soon as he is able to pull out of that engagement, he will then join this meeting. So we are expecting the Deputy Minister to join the meeting at any time as soon as he's able to do so. Those are the apologies, at least from me, arising from the information I've received from the Secretary for Defense. There may be further apologies, but I will recognize the Secretary for Defense when we get to the apologies on their side. Can you start the apologies of the committee? Nandipa, do you have any apology from the committee side?
Good evening. Good evening, Chair. Good evening to members and everyone present in the meeting. There's an apology from Ms. De Huase, who is currently attending another meeting. And then there's also an apology from Ms. Bartlett, who is still on the roll but will log in a bit later.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Those are the two apologies. But Ms. Bartlett will join the meeting later on. All right. I also received a call from the co-chair, Honorable Chabeleng. He's also driving, but he would be in the meeting. She had attended a SOPA, a State of the Province address this morning, and then later the NSOP meeting. And then, so he would be part of this meeting. But we understand the challenges when you are in a meeting, but you have to move from A, point A to point B. So there may be some connectivity challenges. So, okay, I thought I should note that. All right, so those are the apologies on the side of the committee. The SecDef, but before I come to you, SecDef, let me formally welcome the Minister of Public Enterprises, Honorable Gudan, to this meeting and thank him for honoring the meeting. Not only by sending a delegation or in writing, but by being present in the meeting. It speaks to how he treats the matters that we are discussing today. The meetings have been, the issues have been in the media for a very long time. So we appreciate when the minister is present, that the issues are actually receiving. It means that the issues are in fact receiving his attention. But that would become manifest in our discussion or deliberations tonight. And SecDef, do you have any apologies on your side?
No, Chairperson, from the officials, we don't have any except to say that I am joined by CJ Ops, Chief of Joint Operations, which is General Sangweni, and the General Nisi, both of whom are going to deal with our item number four. So those are the ones that are here with me, Chairperson. Otherwise, we don't have any other apologies from our side.
Okay. Now, thank you very much, SecDef. The delegation from AMSCO is led by Advocate Bada, the CEO, and it includes the group executive acquisition and supply chain, Mr. Tefo, the executive manager acquisition, Mr. David Grisser, and the group executive research and development, Dr. Mkhaza. And from the DPE, Department of Public Enterprises, as I said, the minister is in the meeting, and there's also is accompanying the minister is the acting director general, Ms. Molisani, and the chief director for defense entities, Mr. Bangani. And from the DINEL itself, we have the acting group CEO, Mr. William Hlakwane, the acting group CFO, Ms. Tandeka Sabela, and the group strategic and corporate finance support, Mr. Sean Matthews. So that then constitutes the delegation from the entities that are in this meeting tonight. Having said that, let's look at how we're going to deal with this. I don't know who I might start with. There's an AMSCO presentation. There's also a DINEL presentation. However, the minister is in the meeting. I will ask the minister just to give us his opening remarks, after which I will invite AMSCO, it being the client of DINEL, and then later DINEL to deliver the presentation. And so the AMSCO will be presentation will be preceded by the input from the SecDef. So it's going to be the minister, SecDef, AMSCO, and then DINEL in that order. Honourable Minister, welcome. I now provide the platform to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and once again, good evening to you. Good evening to members of your committee. Good evening to the SecDef and representatives of the SANDF and AMSCO, and our board representative, Ms. C.D. Makhada Budi, who's supposed to be with us, and the management of DINEL, who are largely in a Hollywood mode at the moment because they're also acting. I think the first point we need to make is that DINEL was one of the institutions like Transnet and Eskom, and of course many others that were directly impacted by state capture, that the commission of, headed by the acting Chief Justice, Justice Zondo, has already presented a report on their findings in respect of DINEL and the matters that need to be followed up. And clearly, one of the findings was that through VR laser and various other mechanisms, the intent of, let's call it the Gupta Alliance, has always been to steal as much intellectual property as possible. Secondly, divert as much cash as possible out of DINEL, and that is why there was the attempt to create DINEL Asia, and dismiss good people and good professionals in DINEL and replace them with lackeys who would do the bidding of Mr. Issa and many others that were involved, including Daniel Mancha, who is named in the Zondo Commission's reports as well. So what we inherited in 2018 was already an organization that was broken, that was in serious trouble as far as delivering on contracts was concerned. And sometime between or before 2018 and perhaps a little bit thereafter, I can't put the finger on the right date, Chairperson. What we have had, in my view, although that seems to be contested by some, is a deliberate appropriation, let's use that word for now politely, of intellectual property, particularly in the high-tech area, by individuals who later made their services available and crossed the fence onto join entities elsewhere in the world. At one stage, I was briefed by the Hawks investigators and the SIU that their case was fairly advanced. This might have been at least 2.5 years ago. And then suddenly, nothing seems to appear in respect of that matter any longer. And there was ample leads to be followed, if I may put it simply, for the investigators to actually follow and find the real culprits that were involved. But there's absolutely no mystery as to who they are and where they are residing and how they continue to undermine Danelle in certain areas. Thereafter, Chair, there have been we changed the board in 2018. The management remained for a short while until we discovered what they were up to, and then they made their way out as well at the most senior level. And interim management was put in place, but Danelle continued its decline. There have been various discussions between the DG of our department and various people within the AMSCO hierarchy in order to find a way in which we could secure funding for Danelle during this period. Unfortunately, the DG is not well, so he can't be with us this evening. But I'm aware of the various discussions that have been held. We have also had blurring of roles during this period as well. And it's something that the Minister of Defense and I have said we will talk about when we get an opportunity to do so in the near future, so that we can understand the current status of Danelle, and also understand where we could take Danelle to as we go to the future. There are certainly slightly better prospects today. Oddly enough, you have the meeting today, and the management can give you more details. But I believe today a High Court decision was made that funds that were held in a medical aid, let's call it trust for now, which were inaccessible to Danelle, notwithstanding the fact that these were so-called surplus funds, the court decided that those funds can in fact be accessed, provided, as I'm informed, that the welfare and well-being of those members that are still left in the medical aid trust, or whatever it's called, are provided for. And perhaps Mr. Shlokwane can give you the number, but I was told it is just short of R1 billion. And that would actually help, according to the acting chair, to at least give Danelle some room to meet some of its obligations. For example, to the South African Revenue Service, and place some of its entities on a better footing in order to deliver on contracts. And there is an order book of a fairly substantial order that the management team can tell you about. But what was lacking all along, and where we needed assistance and got very little as Danelle in this period, is operating capital. Because as you know, Chair, if there's no operating capital, you can't produce anything. And you can't sell anything. And therefore, you don't get revenue coming in. Where government did assist is to pay off certain obligations that Danelle had in terms of debt which were guaranteed, and that ran into a couple of billion rands that has been paid out, and there's a small amount that is outstanding in that regard. So we might well be at the beginning of a process or period during which the NEL can find its feet again, and we have an interim chair and board that is very committed to making the NEL work. And I have a very high regard for the fact that through thick and thin, these few members of the board have stuck it out under the guidance of the interim chair, Ms. Gloria Sarobe. And hopefully they will assist us in getting the NEL back on its feet when it has been on its knees for a substantial period of time. And that could also mean better interactions with the South African National Defense Force in terms of their needs. But we're going to need some agility and flexibility in how we fashion Danelle as we go forward, based on what I have actually told you. And that is what will emerge in the next month or two, and we can keep your committee informed at an appropriate point in time. One of the issues that has been brought into sharp feature at the moment is that although we are aware as a government and the wider public that there was this phenomenon of state capture, corruption and mismanagement within Danel, but I'm sure it's in many other entities as well, we actually have not set aside money that would enable us to get important institutions to recover from the period of state capture. Essentially, they've had to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and continue to operate, try to make the adjustments that are necessary in their business models and in their operating environments, and ensure that they can reach some kind of equilibrium. In some cases, we are beginning to get there. In other cases, like Eskom, we have a 400 billion rand debt that is still outstanding that the Minister of Finance referred to during his budget. We still have to do a lot more work, technically speaking, in terms of how Eskom is helped with that particular debt burden. So I thought I'll just paint the broad picture, Chair, for you in terms of where Danel comes from, where the current lay of the land is in terms of its current prospects, but also indicating that there's hope for a better future, provided that we have the necessary imagination, agility, and resilience to get Danel going into a very different path. You will see some of these issues both in numbers terms and in terms of narrative when Danel management has an opportunity to make their presentation. Thank you very much for this opportunity, Chair. You're muted, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you very much, Minister, for the presentation. And you say there's a hope for a better future. And you are assuring us that it's still possible for Danel to get on its feet again. Are done and you are alive to those things and you are attending to them. I think that's the context against which we will be receiving the presentation tonight. Danel has been the subject of discussions. I think in the last 2 years since I've become a member of this committee, for one reason, that it had close to 80% of the SNDF, it's 80% of the order book. it comes from it's the SNDF. In other words, SNDF is the main client, and if it goes down, so is if Dinel goes down, so is the defense industry, so is the SNDF. So that's basically the context in which we are engaging in this discussion. Now, having received this briefing from the minister, let me welcome the SECDEF to just give us the remarks and then introduce the colleagues from AMSCO who are going to take us through their first presentation. Over to you, SECDEF.
Chairperson, if I may just ask you, questions to the minister, will that be, must we hold it on until afterwards, or can we ask him now a question based on what he's conveyed to us?
Yes, no, let's take the questions after we have listened to all the presentation. Okay. In that way, Mr. Marae, there will be questions to the minister, questions to AMSCO, and questions to Dinel. And we then expect them to fill the answers in that order as well. Are you happy with that approach?
Yes, yes, no problem, sir.
Thank you so much, Mr. Murray. All right, SECDEF, over to you.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and good evening, Minister Gordhan. Chair, I think that I agree with the sentiments that have been expressed by Minister Gordhan. And to say that for us as DOD, we do have our concerns, and it will help if we found a solution. And I think also one could not overemphasize the need for us to work together with our colleagues from the Department of Public Enterprise. Simply, Chairperson, from a point of view that we have already put in quite a lot of money as defense into projects, multi-year projects that are being worked on by Dinel. And if you take, for instance, the Wolf Aster, which is within their land system space, we have put already about 7.6 billion, and we're still at the first stage, which is your design and development. So, and those are some of the things that we need to look at to say then, what do we do? Because at this point in time, we don't have anything that we can show for it. And already we get asked by the AG to say, what are we going to be doing to deal with all these things? However, Chairperson, I wouldn't want to dwell much into the details, but safe to say that the presentation by the colleagues from AMSCO will speak to some of the things. The issue of IP is critical to the Department of Defense Chair, because we put in a lot of money towards R&D, and that's how we then, out of that process, are able to get IP. And of course, we are operating in a financially constrained environment, and some of these things, one can explore how we can monetize them. But also, we don't know at this point how the solution to the revival of Dinel will culminate in and how it is going to be in the event it does. But then if not, then some of the IP that we have will help us in the event, for argument's sake, if it is decided that we are going to partner with the maybe other strategic partners that have an interest. We can't go into those negotiations cold without anything that we'll have to offer. But even in future, maybe it is also through those data packs that something can be built on them. And then two, Chairperson, you know, there is an issue of the IP Act of 2010, which falls under the Department of Science and Innovation. This IP Act is critical for us in as far as the issues of IP are concerned. But the presentation will also talk to that, because they do the dairies for us, development, evaluation, research for us as a department on all our arms of services. Now, the act basically says says that we can put money also in research and development through a CSIR, but we cannot lay claim to the IP that will be born out of that process. So it means that we can't monetize it, and yet we would have put the money in there. So there are some of the issues that need to be looked at, and how also just generally as we move forward, how can we look at the exploitation of IP just to try and augment our budget. Chairperson, the fact of the matter, and I think it's going to reflect in the presentation that AMSCO is going to make, is that, for instance, some of the challenges that are faced by DINEL, even from the service contract point of view, their execution, there are things that, for instance, if you look at our dynamics, our MISAs, and also the commercialization of a data, they become very critical for us. And I think it's important that we deal with those because we know where we need to utilize them. So I'm hopeful that, you know, as we move forward, we'll be working very closely with our colleagues from the Department of Enterprise. And we've done, tried to do that with a DG Khatato Kagudi. So we are hoping that this will really help us to move things forward. But I wouldn't want maybe to dwell in much more detailed presentation, Chairperson, because the presentation from the colleagues in AMSCO will actually delve deeper into all these issues. And then I think that some of the questions can be responded to once the presentation has been concluded. That's what I would like to submit at this point, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Secretary. I think it is the right time to invite the group CEO, Advocate Mbatha, AMSCO CEO, Advocate Mbatha, to come on the platform. May I request that you set your video on. I can see it's on. All right, over to you, Advocate.
Good evening, Chair, members of the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, Minister, SecDef, colleagues from both from DINEL and the DOD. Chair, our presentation is in three parts. The first part will deal with the protection of sovereign intellectual property, which will be covered by Dr. Mkaza, and the latter two will be covered by Mr. Husserl, both on commercialization of the A-Data missile and its impact thereof to the South African Air Force, as well as lastly, will deal with the capacity of DINEL to continue with the existing service contracts with the SANDF. Their chair will be looking at possible, you know, as solutions. I must say, Chair, these are informed by our scanning of the industry. In the event there is an opportunity for DINEL to either partner with various other role players. As we all know, Chairs, it's been stated that some of the skills are not necessarily at the moment residing with DINEL. So we felt that there is an opportunity to say if those employees that left DINEL can be roped in. Some of them, we know which companies they have joined. But all these issues, Chair, are merely from our side on a proactive basis to say in the interest of all the projects that the department and the state has severely invested huge amounts of monies in order to ensure that the capability that the SANDF requires, we can still at least, albeit, Chair, as you will know, that most of the projects have moved to the right, but to make sure that at least we can salvage these projects based on its criticalness. So I'll hand over to my colleagues, Chair. I'll hand over to Dr. Mkaza to cover the first part on IP, As the Secretary has stated, it's a very sensitive matter, as also the Minister has touched on, in terms of how do we ensure that we protect and making sure that whatever IP that has been generated, it continues to benefit the country, and making sure that there is a whole framework so as to ensure that at any given time we can account for this IP. I must say, Chair, even the Auditor General is currently auditing us in terms of how we are managing this asset. So it becomes quite critical. And over the years, Chair, over the last, I would say, 5 years, we had realized that we have a real, you know, weakness and making sure that we needed to tighten the management of IP. And over the last 5 years, as I've said, Chair, we have established a unit, you know, capacitated by various, you know, IP specialists and admitted IP lawyers who are really, you know, making sure that they can, at any given time, we can account and monetize this IP, and we are able to know exactly what is the value of this IP. And of course, Chair, like IP, like any other, you know, intellectual, you know, capital, it is important at any given time we are able to build on the existing, because it can quickly become obsolete if you don't catch up and keep abreast with the technological developments. So we, from time to time, we will invite the industry to make sure that they can participate in the further development, further improvement of this IP. So Professor Mkhaza will deal with those aspects. Without any further ado, Chair, let me hand over to Professor Mkhaza to cover the first part. Over to you, Prof.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair, and to the Minister of Defence and DPE, members of the Joint Standing Committee, and the rest of the colleagues. The first part for me, Chair, is to just explain the IP governance process and how we go about on matters relating to IP protection, and why we generate IP, and also how we go about the approvals and the consideration we give when we generate that IP. Chair, AMSCO, as you know, is the custodian of the Department of Defense Intellectual Property, and this is in terms of the AMSCO Act. The Department of Defense IP, meaning that IP funded by the DoD, is generated through acquisition and research and development projects. And all of it is developed for sovereign and strategic reasons which are key to national security. There is an IP governance process that we have in place, which ensures that the approval for exploitation of DoD IP is granted to industry. In doing so, we give due consideration to ensure that no entity is allowed to exploit the sovereign IP.
Sorry, Doctor. I thought you were going to flight your presentation. Are you going to do it?
Yes,
they
are doing so. Yes.
Yeah.
Can they give us permission?
They said. The host has disabled participant screen sharing. We are unable.
The host has disabled the sharing. Can you enable the sharing, host?
Okay. Sorry, I've done so, Chair.
You've done so. Yeah. All right.
I must improve.
Okay, I can see it coming online. All right. Thank you very much. My apologies, Doc. I'm back to you.
I must continue, sir. Are you able to see it now, Chair?
Yes, very much so.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah. I will then proceed. As I was saying, Chair, when we give consideration to exploitation, we ensure that no entity is allowed to exploit sovereign IP or any technology that will compromise national security. It is important to stress that in all the exploitation requests that we receive, ours is to make recommendation to the Department of Defense, and the DoD is then the final approver of all our IP exploitation transactions, as they are the owners of the assets. Chair, I would like to also point out every request from the industry has always been approved, except for those instances where the requester, due to whatever processes they have with third parties, the arrangement between them does not materialize. And the idea behind the governance process, Chair, is to encourage IP exploitation in an inclusive manner. Chair, the following slide, really, we took it straight from the defense review. And we put it there just to give a reminder of what we mean by sovereign capabilities and also strategic capabilities. I am not intending to read it through, Chair, as it is already in the public domain regarding that. If Chair permits, I'll move in to talk on sovereign IP protection relating to DNEL in particular, if that is okay.
Okay.
Yes. So, Chair, over the years, we have contracted DNEL to develop intellectual property on behalf of the DoD. And as I indicated, this includes the sovereign IP and the strategic IP. And historically, we have allowed DNEL, and which we do also to industry, to keep the data packs relating to the IP developed under the AMSOL contract so that they may be able to execute on projects and on contracts. Now, Chair, the AMSCO Act mandates that AMSCO to manage and utilize DoD IP as directed by the Secretary for Defense, and this is in a service level agreement. Now, we have an issue now, Chair. I just wanted to put that aside. We have an issue now, as the Secretary for Defense has indicated, with the IPR Act. The IPR Act now, which provides that the IP emanating from public finance research and development shall be owned by the recipient. The recipient in this case being the AMSCO contractors. And the IP developed by the defense since August 2010 can technically be owned by a company. This is subject to some condition, but it can be owned by the company that has developed that IP. So the IPR Act allows the industry to do as it pleases with this IP, which then exposes the country and compromises national security. And this challenge from the IPR Act allows loss of control of all defense IP by the DoD, as most of that IP was upgraded after the Act came into effect in 2010, and most of the IP developed before the Act has now been obsolete. Therefore, the requirement, because of this Act, for the DoD to approve the industrial transactions involving IP falls away, and AMSCO's mandate as a custodian of DoD IP is diminished or becomes redundant. And this then divests the DoD of its strategic independence and sovereign capabilities and compromises national security. To this effect, and to try to remedy this, Chair, we have prepared a cabinet memo to request cabinet to approve the amendment of the IPR Act retrospectively. We have shared the cabinet memo with the Secretary for Defense. And that's what I would want to highlight, Chair, regarding the challenges emanating from the implementation of the IPR Act. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we then move to the second aspect of the presentation, commercialization of the aid data measure and the impact on the South African efforts?
Chair, Minister, Secretary for Defense, and members of the Standing Committee, I will present the.
You are too soft. Can you try again?
Chair, if you can hear me now. I will present the latter two parts of the presentation by OMSCOR, being the commercialization of the ADART missile and its impact on the South African Air Force, as well as the capacity of DNL to continue existing service contracts with the SANDF. Chair, as an introduction, I must just state that
I did not get your name.
David Crissell.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, this presentation will present the situation at DNL from an Arms Corps perspective and from the experience that we have at the moment as the entity that contracts, amongst others, DNL to provide services and products to the South African National Defence Force and Department of Defence. Chair, if I may start then with the issue of the commercialization.
Sorry. Please, what's happening now? We lost you.
Chair, if you can hear me, yes. I will start with the issue of the commercialization of the ADART missile and its impact on the South African Air Force. As a background, the ADART missile that was developed by DNL is a fifth generation air-to-air missile, which was developed under Project Arthur High, co-funded by the...
There's so much of background noise, Chair.
Yes, there's a competing noise in the background. I'm looking at the thing to check who this person is. Can you all switch off your mic, please?
Can I continue, Chair? Okay, Chair. The ADART missile, which is the missile which is intended to be used by the South African Air Force on the Gripen aircraft, was developed under Project Asahai, was co-funded by the Brazilian Air Force. The Brazilian Air Force co-funded this program in order for them to receive a technology transfer from South Africa and to place them in a position to also industrialize and manufacture this missile. So for that, they paid the 50% of the cost for development of the missile. Chair, the development of the ADART missile under Project Asahai was completed in November 2019, albeit 4 years late. But you must also add that we were very optimistic with the development time for this missile if we compare it to the development times of comparable missiles that are developed and manufactured internationally. So
Chairperson, my apologies for interrupting. I just want to make sure this is seems to be an updated version of the presentation that was sent to us. Am I correct? And that we haven't received that specific one.
Yes, I also picked that up, Mr. Yeah. Marais. Like, for instance, yesterday we received one. I think this appears to be an updated version.
Correct.
Is that okay, CEO?
No, that is definitely because if you go to the previous page, if you just look at the contract execution status, it's certainly, I mean, our one says 8 times practice and 8 training missiles, and this one refers to 16. So quite a vast difference. And maybe if we can just have clarity on that, and then we haven't got this copy.
Jay, if I may respond, yes, we did make some slight updates to the presentation to sanitize it to some extent. The 8 plus 8 missiles, the 16 is basically a combination of the practice and the inert missiles. So we're basically just reflecting 16 of missiles in total, which are available at this point in time. Jay. So there are some slight updates only to this part of the presentation. Chair, the contract for the industrialization and the production of the missiles, for the full complement of missiles, that being the practice, the inert missiles, as well as the operational missiles, was placed on the now in March 2015. And that was the time at which the development of the ADARTA missile under Project KAMAZ was contracted to be completed. So the contractual completion date for the full delivery of the full complement of missiles to the South African Air Force was March 2018. And I will get to the status in the next slide. So the South African Air Force, in lieu of the ADARTA missile, is currently utilizing an interim missile on the Gripen aircraft. Chair, the status of the production of the missiles for the South African Air Force is that 16 of the practice and trainer missiles, so it is 8 of each, have been substantially completed. The missiles are there. What is outstanding before we can take delivery of those missiles is the missile hangars, and that is basically the interface between the missile and the aircraft wing, and the missile hangs on that hangar. So some significant material problems were experienced with those hangars, which caused this safety issue. And the NAL has been investigating the utilization of different materials, and those materials that they have identified are currently being evaluated to ensure that they meet the requirements. So once those hangars have been qualified, we could potentially take delivery of 8 practice and 8 inert missiles. Chair, the balance of the missiles, and this includes the full complement of the operational missiles, there has been no progress to date due to the challenges that are being faced by the NAL. And I will not elaborate on the challenges faced by the NAL. I think that is already common knowledge. The fact that they could not obtain any components, subsystems, or spares from suppliers due to non-payment. And at the moment, they are also suffering from a lack of capability and capacity. Chair, the missile design, due to the fact that this missile development actually started quite some time ago, should have been completed in 2015. We are already seeing that there is some obsolescence in the design, and that will have to be re-engineered to a certain extent, and we will have to do an audit or an assessment to determine what the extent of the re-engineering would be. Not a total redesign, but where some components have become obsolete, we would have to look at replacing those components. Chair, the options going forward, our responsibility towards the South African Air Force is to ensure that the Air Force has got continued access to the latest missiles on the combat aircraft. So there are a number of options that are being investigated at present in lieu of the ADARTA missile being available at the time when it should have been available. So we have successfully managed to negotiate a further 2-year life extension on the interim missile, which is being used on the Gripen. That will buy us some time. Chair, the option, as we see it, available to us in order to get some traction on the production or completion of the industrialization and production of the ADATA missile is to partner with other local entities, with the emphasis on local, to assist with the completion and the production of the ADATA missile. We have had several exploratory engagements with the local entities, and that has revealed the willingness and sufficient capacity to execute the missile production by means of a partnering arrangement with Arms Corps, and this would, of course, include Danel, who at the moment holds the data pack and who has all the required facilities. Okay, and this from Arms Corps' perspective, is something that we would need to do as Danel Dynamics, who is the contractor for the ADATA missile, has suffered a significant loss of capacity in the development and production capability, to such an extent that there has been no progress in the production of these missiles for quite some time. There would also be some limited re-engineering work, as I have already indicated, to re-engineer some parts of the missile which might have become obsolete. I'm not saying it has, because we will have to do a complete and a comprehensive assessment. Chair, to continue with the production of the ADATA missile is the only viable way forward for us to ensure that the South African Air Force has access to short-range air-to-air missiles on their fighter aircraft. We have looked at all the other options. None of them are really viable. So we have to continue with the ADATA. We will further engage with the South African Air Force regarding this proposed way going forward of, rather than relying only on the Danel to start engaging and investigating the options of forming a partnership agreement between some of the other entities who have taken over a lot of the capability and capacity that existed within the Danel previously. Chair, that in short would cover the situation with regards to the ADATA and the availability thereof to the South African Air Force. If you would allow me to, I would then continue with briefly looking at the capacity. And again, this is from an on-school perspective and on-school experience, with the capacity of the Danel to continue the execution of service contracts for the South African National Defence Force.
Please Chair,
we have all heard over quite some time of the financial challenges which the Danel is facing. So the financial constraints experienced by the Danel Group, it has become very visible to us that they are experiencing challenges with obtaining components and subsystems from suppliers. We rely very heavily on Danel and certain of the divisions of Danel to continuously provide spares, subsystems and components to the SANDF to ensure that the product systems of the SANDF can be sufficiently and properly maintained. The capacity and supply challenges that they have are significantly hampering the deliveries against most of the Arms Corps contracts that we have on the Danel at the moment. The challenge is really that the Danel is the original equipment manufacturer of a number of equipments and subsystems that are in use by the South African National Defence Force. And as such, the Danel is in possession of the data packs, for example, for some of the vehicles for which they are the OEM. So we need to have cooperation with Danel in order to continue providing these services, maintenance services, as well as the provision of spares to the National Defence Force. And in some cases, they are also the design authority of some critical subsystems or items of larger product systems. For example, the unique pyrotechnics which are being used in the South African Air Force aircraft. Pyrotechnics such as the ejection seat cartridges for the aircraft, as well as fire protection cartridges, fire extinguishing cartridges, which is used in our aircraft. And some of our aircraft, as the committee would know, are very unique, like the Rafale attack helicopter, which is unique in its design. So we have got unique cartridges in there, which are currently manufactured by the Danel PMP. So it poses a challenge to us to obtain the required equipment and services from other instances, the fact that these are not commercially available anywhere else, and we are basically forced to source it from the NEL, and we need continued supply of those critical subsystems and components to ensure continued airworthiness of the systems or aircraft of the South African Air Force. Chair, I will then briefly look at the status of service provision from an Arms Corps perspective and with Arms Corps experience by the NEL for the South African National Defence Force. It is important to note that at this point in time, the only entity within the NEL that is continuing to provide services to us is the NEL Aeronautics. They have been contracted for the maintenance of three aircraft types of the South African Air Force, being the Rafale attack helicopter, the Oryx medium transport helicopter, as well as the C-130 medium transport aircraft of the South African Air Force. Aeronautics has been financially ring-fenced, thus allowing them to utilize the income from contracts and deliveries that they do to Arms Corps to procure essential spares. To assist in this process of ensuring that the continued maintenance of aircraft for the South African Air Force, we are also assisting the NEL Aeronautics by direct payment of selected suppliers. We are also directly contracting selected spare suppliers for the South African Air Force. And these are spares which previously were acquired through the NEL Aeronautics. We are now contracting directly with mostly foreign suppliers of critical spares for the various aircraft types of the Air Force. So the contracted maintenance work on the South African Air Force aircraft is continuing at the moment, albeit at a slower pace. Chair, then to move on to the NEL land systems and the NEL vehicle systems, they have both been affected, and all contracted services to them have been affected due to the unavailability of components from suppliers and subcontractors. And we have identified, in the case of the NEL vehicle systems, which is primarily the supplier of spares for a range of vehicles being utilized by the South African Army and also other services and divisions within the South African National Defence Force, we've identified alternative supplier for those spares that were traditionally sourced through the NEL vehicle systems, and this has been done in conjunction with the NEL vehicle systems, so the alternate supplier has access to the data packs as well as to the supplier database, and we have already placed orders on the alternative supplier to provide critical spares for the South African Army. To continue to the test and evaluation services provided by Overberg Test Range in the Cape, they have suffered some personnel issues or losses, but they are continuing to be in a position to provide services to us to the extent that we have contracted them. One of the main problems or significant problems that we are facing with at the moment is the supply of ammunition and other pyrotechnics by PMP. Firstly, due to tax compliance issues of the NEL, as has already been mentioned by the Minister, we cannot place any new contracts on any DNL division. We have engaged with National Treasury to seek a dispensation in order for PMP to supply critical small caliber ammunition to the Department of Defense. And again, PMP, for various reasons, is the only entity that we can contract to provide the specialized ammunition with specialized markings on for the National Defense Force. They are furthermore experiencing some challenges with procurement of raw materials required for the execution of these contracts. And those are contracts or existing contracts which we have on them, which are at the moment all significantly late due to the fact that they cannot acquire or procure the raw materials. So we have experienced significant delays in the execution of critical contracts, and critical contracts are contracts such as contracts for the supply of pyrotechnics and ejection seat and fire extinguishing cartridges for the South African Air Force aircraft, because we must bear in mind that those cartridges all have a predetermined life, and once the operational life of those cartridges has expired, the aircraft are not permitted to fly any longer unless they are replaced. So we are investigating alternative options to ensure the continued supply of cartridges to the South African Air Force to ensure continued airworthiness of the various aircraft. Chair, then Arms Corps' perspective on the way forward, what we are busy doing at the moment to ensure that we can, to the best possible way, continue supplying products and services to the National Defence Force, which come from the NEL. So as far as the NEL Aeronautics is concerned, they will continue with the product support services for the African Air Force. We will continue to assist with direct payment of selected critical suppliers and with the direct procurement of selected spares for this African Air Force. And the fact that the NEL Aeronautics has been ring-fenced should reduce the outflow of critical personnel within that division. As far as the NEL vehicle systems is concerned, we will continue with the utilization of alternate supplier of critical spares until such time as the NEL vehicle systems is in a position to be able to supply that directly to us and to be able to source all the required spares from the various suppliers. With regards to the NEL land systems, we will continue to engage with potential alternate suppliers of spares and services, which was traditionally sourced from the NEL land systems. And I must just mention, Chair, that in all of these cases, it is absolutely imperative for us to be able to get access to all the latest data banks for all those equipments in order to identify and properly identify the spares which are required. With regards to PMP, Arms Corps is investigating options or mechanisms to assist PMP with the procurement of raw materials to facilitate the continued production of munitions for this African National Defence Force. So we have had several engagements with National Treasury for a temporary waiver or some dispensation which would allow us to place contracts on the NEL, the broader than NEL, but more specifically also in this case, PMP. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chrisa, for the presentation. Okay, before I open it up for discussion, let's take the presentation from Dinah. Once we are done, the minister would come back, maybe just to wind up the presentation on the side of the denial before I open it up for discussion. All right, denial.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening. Good evening to the honorable members. Good evening to the minister, the SECDEF, and the rest of the colleagues from TPE, as well as Arms Corps. Am I audible enough for you, Chair?
Yes, you are, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. So, Chair, we'll cover the similar arrangement in terms of presentation. We'll cover the IP protection. This is part of the process that DINEL undertakes, you know, to protect, you know, the IP which is within our hands, and we'll also talk about the A data, and we'll give you a bit of a brief in terms of our capacity and capability. Chair, the IP protection is of critical importance to us as we value the severity of the effects of security with regards to IP. Arms Corps, as it has been, you know, alluded to by the Arms Corps Act, we do comply with it in full in terms of the regulations thereof. Our IP is stored in very protected networks and vaults as well. And the access of it, Chair, is very controlled. It's too much controlled in such a way that there are different levels of approval to access this particular IP. We also assess our own ICT in terms of security. We do this on a regular basis. There are people that have access to the IP from the program management, these are engineers, the technicians, and the project managers to can be able to execute this. So they do have those level of approvals to can be able to access this IP, not in a whole chain. It's only aspect of the IP that is accessed. So if you have an access, we don't give you the full access of everything in terms of the design. It's only for a portion of what you are looking for, and you also have to state reasons as to why do you want to access it. And it is in both the native and the PDF files, which is the database, that we give access in a similar manner. And of course, there's the recent IP security policy that we have developed in DINEL that we have asked, you know, our employees to adhere to. And this IP chain is audited by AMSCO on a regular basis. We do allow AMSCO to come on board and audit this IP, which is at our disposal. With regards to the risk chain, there have been allegations of the IP that were stolen, and this matter had been, you know, ventilated with AMSCO. There were investigations that were done. Currently, we have an executive who has been dismissed in December of last year, after his case internally had been concluded with regards to the stolen IP. This matter has been held by SIU. They will continue to litigate against the said member, as well as the other parties that may have received this particular IP. It is important to note, Chair and the members, that we had opened the case of theft of IP last year. And this is in a whole of denial, not specifically to the ones where there was a breach. We tried to look holistically for the IP that might have been stolen without our knowledge within denial. So all of these cases have been investigated by SIU, will fall under the same case. Chair, it is important to note that in as much as we do issue IP and data packs, or data packs, not IP, the data packs to the larger industry in terms of delivery, you will know that DINEL, there's certain aspects of work that we do internally in DINEL, and we partner with the rest of the industry to deliver a particular program. So we do give these data packs, but these are specific data packs for a specific outcome that we need from a specific supplier, because they will have been qualified to do such, and then we'll give them the database for them to get, be able to purchase for us. And I think it has become a problematic for us in that once it lands in the public domain, it's very difficult to actually manage. But we do have those strict measures wherein the databases that they are giving, it is very limited to a particular aspect of the entire design that will issue out to different different members of the industry. So that is one thing that we really need to take care of, Chair, going forward. And of course, yes, the intervals in terms of the conducting the vulnerability tests in terms of the IP. We have tasked the SAA to assist with us on that. The matter is still ongoing, as our liquidity situation doesn't allow us to can be able to pay for some of the services. And of course, yes, we have to strengthen those conditions of employment to get into protection of IP. You will know, Chair, that the IP has many aspects. This is intrinsic IP. We call it intrinsic IP because it lies in the people's heads. These are the people that have been trained, for example, to develop a missile for 20, 30 years. They have this knowledge in their heads. We have tried through the new contracts now, which is the new employment contract, to enact clause of restraints of trade with regards to the employees that join the business in such a way that when they leave at any point in time, they are barred from working for similar companies in which we operate. So these are some of the interventions, Chair, that we are taking, that we are now reviving our own policies internals to deal with these particular aspects of this intrinsic IP that lies in those people's heads. Because once they leave, they can go and redo what they have been doing in denial, for example, elsewhere. and they are on their own, they have a free will to do so. So it is within these policies that we want to make sure that they don't have that free will and they're closely guarded going forward. And with regards to the centralization of the IP, we have taken note that we had never any control of the IP which lies between the divisions, which are solely managed from the divisional perspective. You'll see in our model that we have tried to elevate it to the top to say we want to manage this particular IP from corporate office in such a way that we have a good handle of how to manage it and exploit it in the best way that we can, in such a way that there are no transgressions, Chair, as they have happened before. So as I said, Chair, this IP comes in different forms in data packs. As we have seen, we store it like that in data packs. We store it in native formats. But what we have done recently, Chair, with the loss of a complement, we now have involved what we call information and knowledge management, wherein we extract this knowledge out of these old people that are still within the business currently. Dinel has not done that, and unfortunately was suffering such consequences of the mass exodus of personnel in our business. So that would be that, Chair, with regards to the IP and IP controls in place. With regards to the aid that I think much has been said, I'm not going to read what David Rissel has written. Suffice to say that the missile can be interpreted, Chair, to the fight aircraft, you know, like the Krypton, as we have the Krypton in South Africa. And it's some of the things that we want to explore elsewhere in the world, wherein we can commercialize this IP, be able to integrate it and actually put it in those aircrafts. And we do have other aircrafts that we're exploring wherein they could be the right fit. The issue, Chair, as you have noted, it is the problem that we have with the skill sets, this particular skill sets, specifically in design and development of this particular IP. But we'll continue to knock on the doors, Chair, and see how we contract the rest of the industry to assist us in this endeavor. Now, with regards to capability, Chair, it's a very busy slide, but I'll try to take you through the slide very slowly. So, as at the first, this is as at the 31st of December. So, this is three quarters of last year of 2021. From the 1st of April until the 31st of December. Between then, we had around 2,600 complement, and as at the 31st of December, we are now 2,185. The delta thereof, as you can see, there's a lot of females that I have left, a lot of males that I have left, and in the main, the people that I have left are artisans, and some of the technical personnel and engineers. They constitute a bigger portion of what we have lost. And as much as we have lost people in finance, in supply chain, in HR, but where the dent in the main is more on the technical personnel. I'll show you in the next slide, Chair, how it has been derived. You'll know that we had around 367 engineers. As at last year, to date, we are sitting at 198. And in the main, these engineers that I have left, these are highly skilled engineers that possesses the sovereign capability for the country. We have lost it. 90% almost of the capability in sovereign capability, we have lost it. They're sitting somewhere in the UAE. And we have also lost a lot of production technicians, as you can see, the number from 1,193 to 761 to date. And those development technicians, as you can see, they've sort of been held down. So the high count, as at to date, we are sitting at 2,185. But in the main chain, the losses are more on the technical people that I have left at the business. This is what paralyzed Dinel to be where it is today. So if you look at the different divisions, Chair, we have about 28 engineers in aeronautics. You have 82 development technicians and engineers and production technicians with a complement of around 249. This is only technical staff. We're not talking about support staff. It's only technical staff. In dynamics, you get Dynamics is 145. And if you look at Dynamics, Dynamics has lost close to 400 of them would have been engineers. And those are highly skilled engineers that we have lost in Dynamics. This is our missile business, Chair. And like I said, you know, the missile business is our sovereign capability. We almost lost everybody in there. There's only 56 engineers that are left, around 78 of design and development. These are just technicians and production technicians in this regard. I look at the critical ones. If you look at DLS as well, we still got a good complement of engineers and in DLS. This land system, Chair, where the Hofister or the Beja project is housed. And we still got some of the development technicians and production technicians with a complement of around 161. So in total, Chair, the technical complement that we have across all the divisions is about 1,199. PNP at 403 is mainly, as you can see, production technicians. It's production-based. That's where we do our munition. So this is basically, Chair, the complement or the capability that we have in the business currently. I must say, some of the sentiments that have been shared by Dr. Fisser in his presentation are true, Chair, in that we are unable in the main to execute some of the programs, not only all of them, specifically in Denel Dynamics. I'll say specifically in Denel Dynamics because they have lost almost everyone. And some of the interventions from AMSCO that we truly appreciate in trying to assist us in terms of paying for suppliers and assist us in getting some of those people that have left the business back into completing some of the programs that are important to the DOD. And we applaud them for that, Chair. So it is in Dynamics which is really paralyzed to the core. And it used to be the darling of Denel. I mean, Denel used to embrace Denel Dynamics because of its highly skilled personnel that are working there. But if you look at DLS and the rest, we fairly are good in terms of the complement. We do have resources to be able to complete some of the projects. But in the main issue is our liquidity challenges to be able to have that capital injection, be able to pay suppliers and execute some of these programs. And this is what is in the main has delayed us. If you go back and look at the A data as Douglas Fisher has presented, it was qualified, Chair, in 2019. And in 2019, January, we almost lost on that particular missile, we almost lost all the complement. In fact, today, as you see, we have only production engineers and few of them, in fact, that can deliver on that specific missile. So the issues have started then, and to date, we have lost that number that I have alluded to in the previous slide. So the current state as it stands with Denel is that, yes, we are technically insolvent. We have this operational dependency in terms of insufficient funding. All close to 789 salaries. This will include tax, as the minister has alluded to, that, you know, with a little bit of the relief that we might get, we should be able to reimburse SARS in terms of the tax. And also inclusive in there is the medical aid. The rest of the supplier environment, we owe them close to 900 million, which is just below a billion. So the cash flow as we project them this year with the current corporate plan, we are looking at making a loss of around 600 million. So the current status, it has been alluded to again in AMSCO presentation, Chair, is our status which is non-compliant, and we have conversed with AMSCO and asked their assistance to apply, you know, with the National Treasury so that we are able to trade with them, and as well as SARS. And they have come forth in assisting us in this regard. So, and again, Chair, the issue that we had in recent months, you might have seen in the newspapers, because of our liquidity situation where we have lost a lot of complement in the financial environment, in the supply chain environment, in HR, we were not able to complete our Fs for 2021, and has the JAC decided to suspend our listing in this regard. It's just solely on the basis that we could not produce the Fs in time. So yes, indeed, the uncertainty on Denel and its future state, it has worried, you know, a lot of customers out there. And even possible international clients are worried. There is about 36 billion of a pipeline in the rest of the world, both in the Middle East as well as in the Asian market, that we are unable to access because of our liquidity situation. So that liquidity still compounds us in getting more orders as our balance sheet is negative. So going forward, again, if you look at the legal matters that we have at hand, you know that last year there was a liquidation application by SAC that we made payment arrangements with them to be able to pay them. This is associated with the Who Faced the program. SAP had been the main contractor in the Who Faced the program, and unfortunately, due to the stoppages or the suspension of the main contract, which was Patria at the time in 2018, the project has been stalled to date as a result of that. So although we do have some resources to be able to complete, we have not been able to move forward. Some of the technical issues are still needs to be resolved between AMSCO and DOD on whether we should move forward or not move forward with the program. So that's where SAP is sitting. So the non-payment of salaries has really impacted us negatively, Chair, in that there's a lot of employees that are taking us to court in their own personal capacity to get their salaries, you know, from us. And we hope with this arrangement that we now have that Minister has alluded to earlier on, that will be able to service this particular interest. So in the main, the same suppliers are still taking the same route that SAP would have taken, and we have tried our best to contain them and have these payment arrangements that we've been honouring in the last year. So Chair, moving forward, we have developed a strategy that we presented last year, which we then approved by him, in that with all of these challenges that we are having, which is liquidity, ability to pay salaries, the management of IP resources that I have left, we thought it was prudent for us to be able to reduce the size of the company, but reduce the number of divisions that we have. We have 6-7 divisions at the moment. We want to go to two divisions, which is maintenance and engineering. And purely because we want to reduce the redundancies and overheads that we normally incur in our environment. And of course, yes, like I said, as you can see, the Dinner SOC holding company concept will be holding this IP at that level so that it's better managed at the corporate level. This is the reason why we have a model like this. But of course, yes, there are benefits, Chair, that are written in terms of the streamlining of the business, getting economies of scale and so forth. And also, Chair, in the main, if you look at engineering, specifically engineering, is that with the loss of complement that we have in Dynamic Dynamics and some in other divisions, we should be able to converge all the engineers under one roof and be able to be trained, some of them that are already in the business, to be trained to do some work that we have. So they will be able to read database, they will be able to get access to these native files for them to be able to understand and learn on how to redesign and design some of the capabilities or certain capabilities that we have lost, including the missiles and so forth. So it is for that reason, Chair, that we have developed this particular strategy to deal with our cost base, to restructure our balance sheet, to deal with these overheads and be able to streamline the business and be focused. And what has been shared by AMSCO in terms of partnering, it is for this particular model that we say we want to build a foundation where we have what we call smart partnering with the rest of the industry. We have been doing it, Chair. Nordinel will produce a complete set, for example, of a particular product. It will be the rest of the industry that is involved in doing that. So we wanna develop that more way and we partner with them. We have a lot of resources, Chair, that are sitting in our books that, you normally use them once or twice in a year. I mean, you can take a test flight engineer that will wait for the aircraft to be completed in terms of maintenance for him to can be able to test it. So it will take 4 months, 5 months. So that person won't be busy between that time. So hence we have the strategy where we see some of these skill sets that we have, they could be utilized elsewhere in the business. And of course, yes, there will be service level agreements between the two new business units in order for these two can be able to operate optimally. That will be my story for tonight. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation. Elaborate and also informative. All right. So, Minister, if you
just to put
wind up the presentation.
Thank you. Now, I just want to re-emphasize, Chair and members, that Danel is and has been an important part of the sovereign capacity that all of us are referring to. And it's important, as I pointed out earlier, to put it back on its feet, not necessarily in its old and expensive form, but in a lot more lean way, focused on the right areas and with some cash in its pocket to do the things that it needs to do. I think there's a greater possibility of executing some of the ideas that the acting CEO has put across. And as he pointed out, there's lots of orders available. If we could just sort out the liquidity problem on the one hand, and correctly re-attract the skills, which is the same in many of the other SOEs as well. The consolidation that you saw on the second last slide into two divisions, I think, is an important step forward in restructuring an entity affected by state capture. It's important to reduce the costs. It's important to equally find partners within government itself so that this entity can move on to a new phase in its life, so to speak, whilst taking into account some of the needs that the Defence Force has, but also do some creative and smart partnering outside. So these are the matters, Chair, that over the next month or 6 weeks, we as a department will be engaging with the board on. Now that we have a little bit of cash, but it's equally important that the Treasury finds some way of supporting the direction that we want to go in, and that further discussions with both the Defence Force and Arms Corps would give us the same kind of focus and alignment that we require in order to go forward. On the question of IP, I think there's been a fair exposure to you about the new protective measures that have been put in place. But there's no doubt that Danel was a prize target of many people concerned, both those who engage in malfeasance within South Africa and those who benefited from that elsewhere in the world. So we've now got to, it's like a punch-drunk organization or a broken house that still has its basic pillars in place, but a lot of work has to be done to renovate it and make it habitable again. And that's where we stand. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister. All right, colleagues, we have heard it from AMSCO, Danel, SADF, and the Minister. On the state of the facilities that we asked them to address us on. I now open the floor for questions and comments. colleagues, I'm looking on the side.
My end is up, sir.
Your end is up? Oh, man. Okay. I don't, oh, yes, I can see it. All right. No, let me just take down the hands.
Do you tell me you didn't expect me to ask a question?
No, not really. What about? All right. So, So I have two hands already. Is that so? It's Mare and Raider. All right. Let me take these two hands for now. Yeah, Mr. Mare and Mr. Raider. Thank you. In that order.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Minister, and to Danel and to Arms Corps as well. I want to address my first questions to the Minister based on his briefing that he gave us, but also in terms of what we have heard. Minister, I think if you had listened very carefully to both Danel and Arms Corps, it is two quite different opinions on the same matter, quite opposing as well to a large extent. If you hear what the Arms Corps has said and the frustrations and what they have started to do in terms of the A data, whereas Danel is still talking exclusive use of that and ownership. So that in itself tells me that there's a major problem and a challenge. If the SANDF is their major client, and if the chairperson is right that 80% of the order book is for the SANDF, then obviously then Danel and the Arms Corps must talk from the same hymn book and the same page. And that quite clearly is not the case. I want to ask you, Minister, some years ago, in terms of the future of Danel and what to do with Danel was supposed to go to Cabinet. Has Cabinet taken a decision on the future of Danel and whether have you considered allowing private equity partners to some of the divisions of Danel? Have you considered selling the 49% in RDM to RDM for a liquidity injection as well? And then also in terms of the 1 billion rand that you are talking about, it seems like you think that's a lot of money. If you had listened to Danel, they have said that they owe SARS over 500 million rand, employees 800 million rand, suppliers 600 million rand. So you're talking about close to 2 billion rand. So in other words, the 1 billion rand is but 50% of what they need to just start moving forward, and then there's no operational capital available. Then that 2 billion rand, and we have seen yesterday, court cases where it has been granted against Danel by trade unions. So it seems like there are quite a number of court cases that has been concluded. I specifically want to ask about that, because it seems like that order book that they rely on might be a very, very flimsy order book or reliance. Let's be honest, Minister. The SANDF, the Department of Defense, also do not have money. You've been Minister of Finance, so you know, you can read the budget, and you know what has happened with the Special Defense Account. You know what have been appropriated now yesterday in the budget. There's not even enough money to do the midlife upgrades of one frigate. What to say all of these purchases and Hoefeister and all of that. So maybe you must give us an indication of really the future of Danel, given all these cases. And if you can just touch on that 1 billion rand, when that can be expected, and whether you have liaised with trade unions as well. Then in terms of the rest of Danel, I just want to ask Danel about the IPs. You have said that the IPs are quite well secured. How many of the security contractors have withdrawn from various sites due to non-payment? We know that those security systems, like surveillance systems, fences, etc., cannot be maintained with a lack of funds. And if they have lost those contractors, how secure is the IP? And remember, they have requested staff to work from home. So in other words, it's not in a secure campus, in a Donnell building where you can protect those things. So those things are very, very important. I want to ask Donnell as well about the aid data. Have they approached any other company to assist them? Specifically, you know, have they approached people like Hensoldt, Incomar, some of the other local industry suppliers and producers and manufacturers? Arms Corps specifically referred to that they have started to work with other companies, approaching them to manufacture, develop and manufacture the aid data. Can Arms Corps give us any indications of who are the companies that they have talked to? I also want to ask about the aid data to Donnell. That contract with Brasilia has been, I think, there's been a long overrun, if I have my information correct. It should have been supplied long time ago. Are there any penalties on those non-delivery of those orders? And to what extent and what is the amount, and how can that implicate the organization going forward? I want to ask the question also about the security and the fact that the presenter has said that it's to a large extent belongs to people who have the knowledge. But if my information is right, and they've to a certain extent admitted to that they have lost an enormous lot of engineers. And we know where those engineers are now. They are in the Middle East. They are in the UAE. They are in Saudi Arabia. So is it not too late? And maybe, Minister, are we not beyond the point of no return with Donnell? And you know, that we cannot go on like this, and that between Donnell and Arms Corps, we have to start to rationalize. Have you considered, Minister, migrating some of these strategic divisions for the SNDF, migrating that to the Department of Defense, where they are more closely linked and related and placed to Arms Corps and the Department of Defense? I want to ask for Donnell. I have seen over the last couple of days, quite incidentally, vehicles similar to the Badger used by Malaysia. And I think the turret comes from Donnell. And my information is that still a contract with Malaysia going on? And to what extent can that be beneficial going forward? And are there certain commitments at the moment? Donnell has indicated that they have settled a court case with Saab. Now, Saab is the suppliers of the Gripen. Coincidentally, I just want to point out to Donnell, Gripen you spell with one P and not two P's. So maybe it's very important going forward if you want to supply the Gripen stuff. Can I just, you know, and also, because if we must move forward and supply the missile, remember we are still, we'll also talk about the Umkhonto. The Umkhonto is also missiles needed by the Navy. So to what extent can Dynamics, with those few people that you've indicated to us, can Dynamics in all practical purposes, can they do something and provide information? Up to Arms Corps, just a question. Will Arms Corps have enough money to maintain the Gripen maintenance contracts or go into new maintenance contracts? We know what has been budgeted yesterday, and that is no beautiful and nice picture for us to look at that. So that is a major, major concern. And then maybe just lastly, Chairperson, if I can use my last questions for you. That's about it. I'm very concerned about the Donnell, that maybe we don't get exactly the same information, and that it seems like conflicting information, and that what we perceive and what has been reported outside and what we hear from Arms Corps and from the SANDF is not the same that Danelle is giving us. So that seems to be quite conflicting, and it is our duty as the Joint Standing Committee on Defense, who's responsible to assist the Department of Defense and the SANDF, that we get to the bottom of this. Somewhere along the line, we will have to sing from one hymn book and you know, talk from the same page. Chairperson, for the moment, that I will stop there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rader.
Yeah, good evening, Chair and colleagues, and Minister. Thank you for joining us. Look, I do think that tonight's discussion would have probably been more beneficial if we not only had the Minister here, much as we appreciate his attendance. I think we also need to have the Defence Minister and probably the Finance Minister all in attendance, because then we could have a proper discussion about the future of Danelle. Because realistically speaking, and I mean, Minister Gordhan was previously a Minister of Finance, so he knows exactly what writing was put on what wall yesterday afternoon. And indeed, the picture that's been presented to us today probably falls fairly short of what we can potentially hope for Natal, for Danelle, even with the best intentions, because realistically there just isn't money to back them up. And the comment about SOEs is that there's not going to be bailouts and there's not going to be further funds coming through. Now, Minister Gordhan, I really appreciated your frank position in your introduction. And I think that we're at that stage where we have to be honest about the state of Danelle, because frankly, it's quite obvious from Arms Corps' discussion, Danelle has let down Arms Corps. Danelle has let down South Africa, really, and our Defence Force, certainly, through allowing themselves to be pillaged and plundered in the manner that they have. But I think Mr. Murray is quite right in saying that, you know, we need to now establish what is going to be the way forward. And honestly, I think that saying that our intellectual property is well guarded is yeah, I mean, that's naive in the extreme. It is probably well guarded, but it's well guarded in the Middle East somewhere, certainly not in South Africa. So, yeah, what is the future of Danelle is probably the biggest discussion that we need to have. How can we safeguard a little bit of intellectual property that remains, safe, in the care of Danelle, and whether it's worth moving it into the Defence Force, back into the Defence Force budget and looking after it there. I think that we're going to have those answers probably through the newly announced SOE special committee that the President has spoken about. But the reality is that I think we're all in agreement that looking at the structure of Danelle that was put to us this evening, Danelle can't survive in its current state. Certainly, there's divisions that are very necessary. There are divisions that are still really beneficial and actually firing on at least 3.5 of the 4 cylinders. So we've got a couple of divisions within Danelle that are still doing what's expected of them and are doing it well. So, you know, when do we get to a point where we pull the plug on certain divisions, focus on what we can still do properly, concentrate our attention and our focus, and of course that of the engineers and the construction personnel, the design guys that are still involved there, focusing their attention on stuff that works and stuff that is going to help them dig themselves out of the hole. I really think that we need to take a big step back, look at what is going to work, because if we just carry on trying to use a shotgun approach to let's fix Danelle, pretend things are not as they really are, we're going to be wasting more of the taxpayers' money. And really, yeah, not achieving what we set out to do. Massive redesign required. It's disappointing to see. You know, I mean, I think we all have a reasonably good idea of the state of Danelle. Disappointing to see it again put, you know, trotted out before us, but also to see almost the denial in the presentation. But, yeah, let's really focus on getting ourselves out of the situation. You know, obviously that there should be consequences for people that have done things in the past. There must be consequences. But let the Zondo Commission and let the SIU deal with those. I think the point is now we need to focus on building something that can work for us going forward. That should be our pressing and urgent focus as we go forward. We really have to start being honest with each other. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Raider. Let me just check if there's still more hands. All right. Honorable Muhle, you are next.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And good evening to everyone in the platform. Chair, maybe my first question will go to the Minister of Public Enterprises. There's a resolve in terms of relocating Dinel to DOT.
Is it possible to set your mic, your audio, your vision on?
Yeah, due to network, Chair, I always move.
Okay, no, it's fine.
All right. Thanks. One, my question, there's a resolve to move Dinel from public enterprise to DOT. What's his take and with regard to that? Are there any engagement to ensure that that resolve is implemented? Secondly, Chair, the presentation given by Dinel and the presentations and several presentations that we have received from AMSCO. And I want to agree with Honorable Murray to some extent that these are two presentations that do not give us the same picture. We all continuously get the picture that says to us Dinel is in a worse state than we could imagine. But today the presentation of Dinel seems to be diplomatic, saying no, not all is worse. It's only Dinel Dynamics where we've got serious challenges. There's an element of dishonesty, I think, seated where I'm seated. We will not be sure as a committee who's actually giving the correct picture in terms of the state.
Have I lost you, Thabo?
We've all lost him, Chair.
Oh, I see. Okay. I thought I was cut out. Thabo, are you back? I can see he's trying to still speaking. I think we lost him due to challenges. And I can see another hand. I don't know. It's Chief of the Defense. I don't know whose hand is this. I don't want to make a mistake.
Good evening. Admiral Morris, Acting Chief Defense Material.
Okay, that's fine. All right, over to you. Can I get your name? You said you are?
Thank you, Chairperson. It is Admiral Morris. I'm the Acting Chief Defense Material. Good evening to the Chair. Good evening to the Minister. Good evening to the Secretary of Defense, as well as the CEO and as well from AMSCO and his delegation, as well as AMSCO and the rest of the committee. Chair, if I may just also maybe just air my view, not responding to the questions, but maybe from a perspective of the end user, meaning the South African National Defence Force. I've noted that the Chief of the Air Force is also in attendance. Chair, from the presentation from the NEL, we have observed that we do have a challenge in terms of the loss of the capacity. But the capacity and the possible IP that has been alluded to abroad or somewhere else, the challenge which we are having in terms of the South African National Defence Force is with the loss of the security contracts, and one of the honourable members alluded to the IP, but also to the insecurity or potential insecurity of our hardware at the various Danel premises. It went to such a stage that we had to intervene as the South African National Defence Force because of the nature of the assets that are basically in possession of OMSCO at this moment. My apologies, Chair. We are seriously concerned about that aspect, and it is resulted from the non-payment of salaries, inability to pay security contracts. That is a major concern, because once these assets actually lands in the wrong hands, that might cause a bit of a challenge, that might even escalate to a threat from within, as we speak, Chairperson. So that is one thing. I think the South African National Defence Force is very concerned about this, and we have released correspondence to that effect. Secondly, Chairperson, looking at the loss of the capacity from Bunnell Dynamics specifically, we have observed that it was presented by AMSCO, that there is a possibility to extend the life of the current missiles with another 2 years. That we have discussed. However, if we look at the capacity of the NEL to deliver on the current A-DATA missile, the Umkhonto, the Ingwes, etc., Chairperson, we are very doubtful if the NEL Dynamics, even with partnering, even if they have the data packs, will be able to deliver hardware, meaning missiles, to the South African Navy, the Umkhonto missile, the South African Army, as well as the rest of the missile family at this moment. We are concerned about that, because that touches on the very same nerve of the edge of the protection of the South African airspace, which is the mandate of the Chief of the Air Force. And the chief of the, and then a maritime domain, the chief of the South African Navy. There's a view that we will have to be, we will, in the maritime domain, if the NEL cannot provide us with the Umkhonto missile, which, Honorable Moray has alluded to, if we do not receive or do not have Umkhonto missiles anymore, once again, we will be dependent on the SSM, the surface-to-surface missile, SSM 40 from abroad, which comes at a real expensive cost to the Department of Defense. Maybe to elevate the situation a bit, Chairperson, it must be noted that the Defense Force has been subjected to many baseline reductions, slant budget cuts. There is an understanding for the fiscal pressures on National Treasury from other environments in other departments. That is fine. But the challenge is, if the Defence Force does not receive an increase in the baseline for capital acquisition, as well as technologies, as well as the maintenance and report, as well as technology funding, the NEL can be revived as much as we so wish to, because there must be a balanced approach that needs to be followed between the funding of the Defense Force to actually expedite the special defense account projects, or the funding that's there, as well as the rest of the funding. Maybe to allude to something else, which we are very concerned about. We have been informed, and we do have copies of a 1992 document, which is in Afrikaans. My apologies, Chairperson and members of the committee. That specific document was called a separation agreement. We call it a sharing agreement, which speaks to three options if a situation like the NAL is finding itself in right now. It actually proposed many, many moons ago that the NAL, there will be three options. One, to be liquidated. Number two, that the remainder of the NAL be transferred back to the National Defense, or to the Department of Defense, as it's been stated. And number three, an injection from National Treasury. That was the three options that's basically in that document, which is still in force, and it can be contested possibly in a court of law. Lastly, Chairperson, from ourselves at this moment, or from ourselves, we need to understand that these things basically links up to the incapacitation, because we are called on anytime, Chairperson, and we need hardware, and we understand the circumstances, but we are in the predicament as we speak. I thank you, Chairperson. I submit.
Thank you very much for that. I recognize the Deputy Minister who has just joined us. I don't know how much of the discussion was he able to catch, but he will indicate when he wants to say to make his remarks. And DM, you are welcome, and I will hear when you want to say something from you. Okay, Mr. Mutle.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thank you, and committee members. Thank you.
Thanks, DM. Thabo was in the meeting, and the system is still on the platform. Thabo?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. This is the disadvantage of being a villager. So you always suffer a network in the villages.
Let's go back to Parliament.
Yeah, that would
agreed. Arien.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think by the time I got kicked off, I had raised the first question to the minister. My second question, and I've also seeked clarity around the two presentations as to which presentation is it depicting the real state with regard to Dinel. Thirdly, Chair, it's around a point that was raised by the SecDef around IPs with regard to the funding that they are making available towards CSIR, and their limitation in terms of them owning the IPs thereof as a result of legislation that are put in place. What does the SecDef suggest that should be done? Does she think that probably will there be a need to revisit those piece of legislations that are a limitation on their side with regard to the IPs versus them availing resources for product that they will not necessarily have ownership in terms of IPs on. I think I'll park it there, Chair.
Thank you very much, Thabo, for your comments. Colleagues, I want to associate myself with the comments that the two presentations seem to be moving parallel to each other. On one end, AMSCO says this relationship is problematic and it is time that they move on. And to that extent, they have identified options that they've started weighing options. And and they've listed those options, and Danielle was in the meeting when they did that. In other words, they are moving on because they can't wait for Danielle to address its own challenges because they need this capability. It seems to me that Danielle is in a state of denial. They seem to be refusing to accept that it's the DOD's major client, and it's starting to weigh its option because they can't wait for Danielle to, you know, to sort its house out. They can't wait because Danielle is not likely to come out of the situation that they're in the near future. I don't know. I think let's come back to that point, Minister Danielle, so that we are clear. We don't want to see the two entities moving parallel to each other. Let there be a shared understanding that, look, whilst we are fixing, number one, accepting the challenges that we are in and the impact that they have on you, and you will move on and will be fixing those challenges. And then when the time is right, we'll then come together again. But at least there's a way forward on the part of AMSCO to say, in view of the situation we Danielle is facing and the fact that we are not receiving a service, this is what we're going to do. But with Danielle, it's problems and problems and challenges and challenges. I don't see how what they are doing to come out of the situation. If anything, that's my view, they will lose more and more personnel. By the time they wake up, and there'll be very few people that they would, rebuild Danielle with. And it will take ages for them to attract the skill back to Danielle. One's capability is capability that also was built over time, over a long period of time. Once lost, to restore it is not going to be an event. It is going to take a very long time to do so. Now, where's in an environment where there is competition. And the competition is not as it was when Danielle was building its own capability. So it will be trying to restore its capability in an environment that is highly competitive. And by then they would have well lost a part of its IP. Like you said, it's in the head of some of the people, and they've gone away with it. And the horse is already bolted. Yes, you are now trying to come up with the restraints of trade, but the horse is already bolted. Those people are out there. You know, they've left with this, knowledge. because you could not manage it at a time when those people were in your employment. So these are the challenges that we are facing. And the minister, maybe if you come in on that part and also deal with the questions that the other colleagues have actually raised.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the honourable members for the issues they've raised and for, I don't know what his title is, but Mr. Morris or Chief Morris.
It's Admiral Morris.
The Admiral, okay. I didn't get that. So forgive my disrespect. I'm just an ordinary minister, you see. So let me start with what you said, Chair. See, we could have said exactly what you said about many entities that were impacted by state capture, corruption, mismanagement, theft, and many other phenomena. So some have begun to be placed on the road to recovery. Some are struggling. So if you take some of the rail entities, it's tough, but nonetheless, the minister concerned there is opening up lines for commuters after many years of trouble in that environment. And what I would say is be a little bit more patient with us. We will be getting assistance from the SOE Council and the private sector component. They are also helping, to bring in financial analysts and turnaround specialists to provide assistance to us. And as I said to you earlier on, recovery from state capture and trying to put a broken house together again, which Mr. Murray doesn't make any reference to, is hard work and it's tough work. The second point is that at this point in time, I don't see the two presentations as contradictory, forgive me. Both describe the shortcomings of Dinel. Both describe the fact that there are certain needs that the SANDF has and that contingency measures or strategic measures will have to be put in place in order to meet the needs of the SANDF. And I think that is already happening and has been happening for some time. And what we want, all of us, is an SANDF that is modern, that is fit for purpose in the modern environment, as the Admiral was pointing out, and the Arms Corps colleagues as well. And that should be the objective that we want to actually work towards. If Dinel had cash tomorrow morning of, say, 3 or 4 billion rands available for operating capital, we'll be talking a different story today. But that is not available. And Mr. Murray, I know a billion is a pittance compared to the numbers that you've added on. I understand that. but it's a start, for where we need to get to. And I think Mr. Ryder, Chairperson, gives a much more realistic perspective on Dinel, where he says, work with the things that still have capacity for the future to go on operating and evaluate whether you want to still be involved in areas that have been badly damaged. And at the same time, we've got to work out with the Arms Corps colleagues and the SANDF colleagues and the Minister of Defense and the Deputy Minister of Defense and ourselves will be engaged in that dialogue. As to what can strategically be, inverted commas, outsourced, and what is it for sovereign reasons that we want to still build capacity amongst ourselves. Admiral, liquidation is not on the table at this point in time, although some would like to see that happen. And I think we need a few more discussions amongst ourselves, and then we can come back to the joint committee or standing committee on this particular matter. So let me, Chair, respond to some of the specific questions that the honourable members have raised. What position has Cabinet taken? I mean, we've all been given a mandate to restructure and reposition with the help of the SOE Council as many of these entities as we can. But as you heard the Minister of Finance say, and those are positions that we've taken, that we also have to evaluate whether we need all the SOEs that are currently on our list as a country, and which of them need to be consolidated, which of them need to find their way out of existence, and which of them need to continue and be strengthened in some kind of way. So those are issues, Chair, that we will have to deal with as we go. And that will include, as we have done with SAA, but with many others as well. RBM is a private equity partner. Hensoldt is one as well, with a majority shareholding. And so if you run down that list, you'll see that there are many initiatives in this regard that have already taken place. And perhaps, as you correctly point out, Mr. Murray, more of these initiatives need to be taken, and that's something that we'll be looking at as well. You call the order book flimsy. I don't know. I'm not familiar with the order book. I'm not sure whether you are, but it's there. Even if half of it materializes, it's of some help, I think, in terms of understanding the future and where we need to go. On the issue of the security companies that you've raised, I'll discuss that with the board of Danel and get a better understanding on that particular matter. And there are issues that our AMSCO colleagues need to address in terms of which companies they have actually spoken to. you've mentioned the countries that engineers have gone to. I've been trying to, because this is a public forum, try to be polite about where these individuals went to and where the IP went to. But your point can be noted in that particular return. Have we reached a point of no return? I'll let you know in the next 2 months whether we've actually got to a point of no return. At this point in time, I don't think so. But let's see how that process continues. On the technical issue of the Badger and the turret, the management team can respond to that. And as the Admiral pointed out, I think the issue of budget availability and fiscal capacity of the state, Chair, as you know, is one that affects every department and every entity. The word honest and dishonest and so on has been used. I don't think that's a bit fair. We've been very frank with you. We've put all the facts on the table. As far as I know, this is our first engagement with your committee, Chair. And we need to perhaps have opportunities to brief you once we know which path we are following in addition to the normal portfolio committees that we actually speak to. And as Mr. Ryder pointed out, the SOE Council is also being instructed by the President to look at some of the issues that have been raised in terms of the viability of some of the, well, all the SOEs. And some tough choices will have to be made as we go forward. Whether it involves Danel or not, I don't know. But as soon as we get to that point, we have an obligation to keep you informed as well. And as I said earlier on, Mr. Ryder correctly points out, there are some divisions that with a little bit of assistance can get back on their feet. So, for example, USARS some arrangement can be made with SARS about tax clearance certificates. PMP can get orders, and those run into, I saw one today for about 140 million rands, Chair. And those sorts of things would be of assistance in bringing cash into the system. And he's right, concentrate and focus on what actually works. And I can assure him that this is not about denialism, but it is about taking a more positive approach and being hopeful in a context where we have a tough road to recovery, given all the other factors that have taken place in addition to state capture, and where we haven't got rid of the culture of corruption completely from every single entity. We see it elsewhere in other SOEs as well. Mr. Mutle's question about DOD and Danel, well, once we're ready to address that question, we'll get back to you. Admiral Morris's point, perhaps a best made in a bilateral meeting with ourselves or with Danel, and we can canvass where we find points of agreement and points of departure and where alternate solutions need to be found. So, Chair, I would agree with you that this is a process that might take a bit of time, and the state will have to do what it has to do in order to acquire those things that it needs to acquire. But it's important, as I pointed out in my introductory remarks, that we need to find common purpose, not contradictory purposes, amongst ourselves so that we can make these institutions work for all of us. And that partnering both within government and outside of government, as several of the members have advised, through SEPs and other mechanisms, is going to be very useful as we go forward. So we're not opposed to that in principle by any means, and we'd like to explore the possibilities as the management is currently doing with other entities as well. So thank you, Chair. As I said in rounding up, that once we know a little bit more about where we're going, we can come back to your committee. Thanks for this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Minister. SecDef, before I go to the DM, are there any questions that you would need to...
Chairperson, not really questions, but probably to touch on some points that have been made. Chairperson, I think that the two presentations, both the AMSCO and the Danel presentation, they may have been different in slight, in slant, in the sense that the Danel one was just painting a picture to the meeting for about what is obtaining and Danel and the challenges that exist there. The one of AMSCO, it was more about the specific and pinpointed areas that have to do with the things that they are procuring on behalf of the department. However, Chair, the common denominator between the two presentations is the fact that the picture that comes out of these two presentations, I don't think that they give us a sense of comfort. In the sense that even with the AMSCO one, you see that the maintenance is running behind with that some complications set in. And then with Danel, it talks to the loss of the capacity. It also talks to the issues of whether, you know, how long Danel, I think the question we'll ask ourselves is, how long are we going to continue in the state in which we find ourselves? And I think the point has been made even by Minister Gordhan that we need to engage as the two departments. Yes, governance-wise, Danel falls under the Department of Public Enterprise. However, the business that Dinel is involved in has to do with the security sector, and specifically also the capabilities of defense. So that's where the issue is. Now, Chair, how quickly we find the solution to resolve these matters of Dinel will determine whether we have the survival of the defense, and then also whether we are going to end up with a defense that is still able to deliver on its mandate, which is to protect and to defend South Africa, its borders, and the state institution. And then it also, Chairperson, it's a frank discussion that we need to have. Frank, open, but also being objective as we deal with that. If we look at what the issues that we are trying to deal with, they have to do, money is but one of the things that can help us move forward on the issue of Dinel. However, we have seen, I think, when their acting CEO was presenting on the human resource capacity they have. Now, if those people have left our shores, and their knowledge has been imparted to the countries that they've gone to, to what extent can we even rely that if we had the money and we said come back, how are they going to be of use to us? And probably those are some of the questions that we need to talk about. I am also, Chairperson, very nervous about the speed with which we are going to move in trying to find the solution to Dinel. Because if we are not careful, we may end up with a situation where we are not even so sure whether we'll be faced with the potential of having to look for strategic capabilities from elsewhere outside the borders of South Africa. And I think from a security point of view, it is something that is going to pose a lot of challenges because we can't be a country and still rely on strategic capabilities to be sourced elsewhere. Yes, there are some that we can still source maybe from the broader South African defense industry, but there may just be some that we will lose and we'll have to source them external to the borders of South Africa. And those are the things that we need to talk about. So, but at the end of it all, and central to everything else, is whether the role that the Defence Force is playing now, will we still be able to continue playing the role? And if so, for how long are we going to continue to do so? Chairperson, even if we continued, it means that there is an onus on all of us to still continue as well with research and development, because that's where we will derive our IP that we are talking about. So in the conversations that I think we should be having, Chairperson, is to be frank to say the state in which Dinel is in right now, is Dinel salvageable? If the answer is yes, is it salvageable in its entirety? Or we should now even be saying that, what are the aspects of Dinel that can be salvaged? Yes, of course, for us, we can say that, yes, maybe let's look at those areas that we think are critical to the delivery of the capabilities of the Defence Force. But if you look, really, quite a lot of our capabilities come from Dinel. So sometimes it's a little bit difficult to say what can we pick and what can we leave and say we will see it at the next time around. So as the minister is saying, yes, there will be engagements, but I think that Chair, my parting shot is that yes, as we look at all of these things, I don't think we have the luxury of time. Because, you know, time is moving very fast. And I think, like I said, that both presentations, they don't give anyone a sense of comfort, because even where they are doing maintenance is also running late. And we have some of the projects that are with Dinel that we know that they will never be delivered on, and then some of them are running almost 5 years behind schedule. So that in itself will also create other problems. I thought, Chairperson, let me make just those comments to say, from a broader perspective, these are the issues, but for us, they are very critical because it is about the survival of the department in itself, in as far as the delivery on its mandate is concerned. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, SecDef. DM, we are concluding now.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity, and my apology for joining the sitting of the of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence late. I hope my apology was submitted on time, Chair. My sincere apology. I am, Chair, covered by the remarks and comments made by the Minister of State Enterprises. What he has said for me is adequate for the purposes of the Joint Standing Committee on Defence business in today's meeting. Because I did not sit through the presentations, yes, the presentation of AMSCO, I have had sight of it, but the presentation of Dinela, I did not have sight of it. That notwithstanding, I'm still covered by what the Minister of Public Enterprises said with respect to the following points that he raised, Chair. Yes, we are in a very unprecedented tactical trouble as the defense establishment of this country. We have not been here before. But the point is that challenged as we are now, we should not remove the macro economic and political consequences of the problem we are dealing with. Because, as through you, Chair, as we all know, the industry we are talking about in its genesis in this country was a highly political development. It was a highly political development because it was an intervention to buttress a highly political program the country was embarking upon. And it shall always remain that way, that we cannot divorce the place of this industry in our national affairs from our political agenda. Second point, Chair, is what the Minister of Public Enterprises said, to say it is not Dinel alone that is a victim of wrong things that happened under state capture that brought it to where it is. There are other state-owned enterprises that, as he has said, are going through the curve of being stabilized, and to give them the opportunity of growing back the capacities that they had before. Government has taken that stance for a very good reasons, and the reasons are strategic, because it would have been easy to say liquidate, and the same principle, in my understanding, would apply to what we are discussing, our arms industry and the state-owned enterprises
that have constituted the backbone of our industry. To say liquidation is an easy, you know, option that we can think of. Confronted by the situation immediately. But if you take things in their totality, you may find that just as with the other state-owned enterprises, you can only cut your nose to spite your face. The third point, Chair, is that the Joint Standing Committee on Defense mandate and responsibility for Parliament is to make sure that our defense organization is always fighting fit. And here the issue is, what capabilities of the South African National Defense Force are being compromised by the state of the defense industry, and in particular these state-owned enterprises? The answer to that, of course, is to say the earlier strategy of saying South Africa's defense industry can be kept humming and in good health from orientating it towards external markets, not the domestic budget of the South African National Defense Force, it's still correct, that strategy. It can work and it has worked. That denial is where it is today. It is not because of, denial not being able to make business sense as an enterprise. It is because of things that were totally not business, subjective, interest that created the problem. But the second point to the Joint Standing Committee on Defense is that for the South African National Defense Force to fight, to be combat ready, the way constitutionally we are obligated, this is a constitutional obligation. It is there. You can read the sentiments in the constitution, what the founders of our democracy thought about our defense establishment. My point is that there is now also, coupled with keeping the industry running by orientating it towards external markets, the allocation of resources to the military organization of this country itself has to be turned around. It's because even as these capabilities, the missile systems that we are talking about that we're able to produce, and many other systems, they can be there, but if government does not give the South African National Defense to acquire them, the capabilities of our defense force would still be problematic as they are. So the budget allocation of our defense force has matter of urgency. It must bounce back and it must be turned around. Otherwise, the capabilities we had will be lost, as it would have been shared with the meeting this evening. In conclusion, all I think from my side, Chair, I can say is that from the ministry, we will insist to make sure that the two entities, the two organizations, they meet AMSCO and DNEL in the context of the spirit of the Joint Standing Committee of Defense this evening, and work out a plan that will help to get us out of where we are. Speakers have spoken to very many concrete things that they've commented about. I don't want to go there, but the two enterprises must meet, and after they have met, we should come again as the two ministries, the Minister of Defense and the Minister of Public Enterprises, to endorse the way forward that would have been put by the technicians. That's what I can say, Chair, to
the committee through you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DM. I think we have exhausted the discussion, at least for today. But we will have to do a follow-up on some of the issues. One issue that we need to do a follow-up on, which we request the department to be, both departments to be seized with, is the review of the Intellectual Property Rights Act. To once again put AMSCO in a position where they become the custodian of the DOD's intellectual property. They've been doing a good job in maintaining that capability and keeping it up to date. But with the act that has been, with this act, they are losing this capability. I think the CEO mentioned that the capability that was there before the act came into being is now suffering from its obsolescence. So due to the changes that came about as a result of this legislation. So let's review it, and so that we quickly address this this issue. And two, we all agree here in this meeting that a capable defense industry, it's a key element of the country's defense capability. And that we must quickly address the challenges facing DNL. If the Minister of Finance was saying we need to review those SOEs, see which one we keep, which ones we let go. This one we must keep. DNL we must keep because it's critical in supporting the Defence Force to sustain and upgrade and maintain its own systems and equipment without having to rely on other countries for that. And it provides the cheapest form of maintenance and the systems upgrade to the Defence Force, because it's homegrown and it's our own sovereign capability. And so I think there's that acceptance. And the last point I want to mention, which the AMSCO must come back on, we accept that there are divisions that are still performing, like the division on aeronautics, which continues to provide a service. And I think it was a good idea that its budget be ring fenced, so that it's paid directly for the service it is providing to AMSCO and the Department of and the SNDF. On contracting directly with the subcontractors to DNL, we don't want to make I don't wish us to make a comment on it, because it's not what was ideal. But you got thrown into that situation that if DNL is having challenges and the subcontractors are also losing confidence in DNL, and let's contract them directly, so that we are able to keep them afloat and retain the capability within the country. And of course, I'm sure you also contract those from abroad. So we accept that is the environment so far, but you have not washed off your hands on Dinel. You know, as soon as Dinel is able to provide a service to you, you will then come back to it. And the minister is saying that they are working hard to turn the Dinel around. And so we will have at some point call for a turnaround strategy as soon as you have developed it, Minister. The one we were promised previously, it seems as if, was it 2 years ago? It seems as if it got overtaken by events. It was looking at certain countries, three or four countries, maintaining their order book of about 20-something billion rand, 26 billion rand, and with Dinel. But due to liquidity challenges, Dinel has not been able to service those, contracts, or rather, you know, the orders, as it were. So the challenges, the liquidity remains an issue. So we'd want to leave it at that for now, colleagues, and then thank the minister for his presentation. They were open with us. That's my view. And in pointing out the challenges, how we got into the situation that we are, and how long it will take us to, what it will take us to come out of it. So, Minister, thank you very much for your attendance this evening.
Chairperson, with your indulgence, the Minister maybe has forgotten to respond to the question about the 1 billion rand on whether when that will be available to Dinel, and then also compare that to what Dinel has said themselves about 800 million owed to employees, 900 million to suppliers, and 530 million to SARS, which is over 2 billion rand, and how he foresees that difference will be made up, and then also generating operating capital, as we all agree they need urgent. Thank you.
All right, Minister, I don't know if you want to deal with that at this stage.
No, I wasn't avoiding it. All I was saying, which I said in my earlier remarks, Mr. Murray, is while I take your point that the arithmetical total comes to what you say, what I'm saying is when your pocket is completely empty and it does now have a third or a half volume in it of some cash, and this is only something that happened today, so I'm not going to be able to give you any details. This is a detail that the board must work on, and we'll work with the board in this particular regard as well. But it gives us something to work with as opposed to an empty hand. And you should know me, Mr. Murray. We've worked together for many years as the chair. I'm an optimist by nature, so let me confess that. And once we have some certainty, we'll get back to you.
Thank you very much. All right, I'm sure that certainly deals with that question, in that it's work in progress. And as soon as you have all the ducks in a row and develop the turnaround strategy, you will come back and to brief us, including the cost attended thereto. All right, colleagues, admit I was thanking the minister. Minister, thank you. I want to thank your acting CEO and the team of Dinel and AMSCO. We thank you for your presentation as well. I think you it's the opportunity, it's the right opportunity for you to take leave if you so wish. So in the meantime, we'll move to the next item.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll excuse myself as well.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thanks, colleagues. All right, colleagues, let's then go to the next item on the agenda, It's the is an application.
Chairperson, can I just say, I mean, this has now been a very, very tough nearly 3 hours that we've had, and I think it's something that we know that is really going to the heart of the National Defence Force and the security and the integrity of South Africa. What has been clear tonight to me is that it seems like Arms Corps and the committee is on the same page, and I'm very, very glad about that. So, because that's our job, to support the Department of Defense and Arms Corps. And that is very, very, very good. So I'm very excited about that. However, when we listen to even the Secretary of Defense and Arms Corps, we don't have time to have much longer discussions. And I know that, you know, we know why our fleet of aircraft is on the ground. We know why our frigates is not on the water or out on the seas. We know what is going on, and obviously our obligation is to see how we can influence the direction that the NEL and Arms Corps must take, because you have said it quite rightly, and I fully agree with you. If we then need to pay the suppliers directly, that means Arms Corps, let's do it. But that is a huge vote of no confidence in the ability of the NEL. And I want to support the idea that was given by Arms Corps that they must discuss and negotiate with other suppliers. We have the suppliers in South Africa. And by sticking with the NEL and not progressing in any way, whether it's the A data, whether it's the Umkhonto, whether it's the service agreements in aeronautics, or the replacement of the rattle, you know, it is a situation that we cannot go on like this. We have to do something now. We cannot do it in 6 months or in a year's time. Then it will be too late. So from my side, thank you on that. And I think we must, as a committee and the Joint Standing Committee on Defence, must have that constantly on our agenda going forward. Because we are now sending our soldiers to Mozambique. And we know that they haven't got the equipment support to do that properly.
All right. Okay, colleagues, I've asked us to move to the next point. Thank you very much for those comments. The next point is just a briefing on the... where is my agenda now? The investigation into the allegation of food poisoning. Satev.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I am accompanied by CJ Ops General Sangweni. He's going to be talking to this matter. And maybe just as a way of introducing Chair, just to say that there were two investigations that were conducted on the matter. General Sangweni will talk to it. The first one was by the department itself, just to follow up and find out what the real situation is and what is the status of everything. Then the second one, the minister interacted with the portfolio committee, and after that, then she mandated the military ombuds to actually conduct an investigation. And then I think that maybe after this, Chairperson will take it in the discussion, but General Samuel will talk to the issue itself. He's going to talk to it without any presentation. And then from there we'll have the discussion. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, I don't know how is this presentation going to be different from the presentation he gave us previously. That made us to request an independent investigation into the allegation. Chief, what you call it, General Sangweni, let me hear what you have to say, if there are any fresh details to it. Are we still together? General Sangweni?
I see his link, Chairperson, but he has not unmuted his mic.
Oh, I see. Okay. General Sangweni? Or Sektev, what there is. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening to all the members of the committee and the Secretary of Defense, the Deputy Minister of Defense and Military Veterans. As the Secretary of Defense has indicated, the Chief of NDF directed me to provide feedback on this matter. But I'll start from the position of seeking or requesting the committee for a correction on your agenda. In the agenda, I see it is reflected or is captured as investigation on food poisoning for the soldiers in Mozambique. If I recall from the media or the newspaper, it was captured as the soldiers were fed rotten food, not food poisoning. And I'm speaking this from the position that's what we had to deal with. And rightfully so, Chairperson has indicated that in one of the Johnston Committee meetings, I think on the 11th of November, there was a question to me on this issue, and I provided feedback at that point, as I had done my staff work and the reports that I had. But going forward today, I'm not sure whether, Chair, the feedback will be the same or similar or will be different. But the Chief of the SNDF took an initiative to conduct his own investigation of the situation or circumstances out of that media or newspaper article, which I believe the purpose was, I had provided the Chief of the SNDF as my senior, being responsible for operations on what had happened or not happened, but he felt that he had also to do satisfy himself. That's why he appointed a very strong team, if I'm not mistaken, of 5 or 6 generals that he tasked to go to the deployment area, or firstly to the mission area and to the deployment area to investigate, conduct a physical investigation on the matter. In the team, there was no officer or general from the Joint Operations Division. So it was outside of my environment, and it was led by Major General Nisi, the Adjutant General. So today, General Nisi is here. He is going to give feedback on the outcomes of the investigation of Chief SNDF. I'm just here to lead that grouping of the military, because the Chief SNDF is not available today. If you allow me, Chair, I'll then request Jeremnisi to provide feedback. But before that, the Secretary of Defense has indicated that, as you correctly said, that you had directed her as the committee to task the Ministry Ombud to do an investigation. The brief that I can provide is that Ministry Ombud, he has finished me with an instruction that they need that to do an investigation. And part of the investigation was to interview relevant and identified and responsible officials at joint operations, with one of them being myself. I underwent an interview or investigation on the entire process of the operation of Operation Vikela, inclusive and particularly on the issue that was at hand, and also my chief director's operation, the general officer commanding operational headquarters, and additionally then they went to the investigating team of Ministry Ombud, went to the mission area and to the deployment area for, if I'm not mistaken, for a full week or more. They went particularly to the areas where it was thought that the allegations or complaints came from, and they conducted their work and came back. At this stage, I'm not sure where they are with the report, because that is a report of the Minister of Defense. But I wanted to confirm that they did commence with their work, and they investigated Joint Operations Division responsible officials, as well as went to the deployment area. They were provided all the access that they needed. But Chair, with that, I request that I call upon General Nisi, as a team leader of the Chief SNDF investigative team, to provide feedback thus far. I submit, Chair.
No, thank you very much. Detective, please, can you intervene? I don't know how you want us to deal with this. My view was that the minister has instructed the ombuds to conduct an investigation. I'm sure in investigating, like the general is saying, they will interview them as well, and in the end incorporate all the views, weigh them up, and then make a determination. Are we not preempting the discussion right now? And on the second point that the general raised, general, maybe we have read different articles on the matter. For example, there is one I have before me. Special forces deployed from South Africa to Mozambique have suffered a diarrhea breakout after consuming rotten food and washing it down with dirty water and something. So it's food poisoning in that sense, that they reacted to it. Now, so the SECDEF, my view is that I think it suffices to say the military ombuds is working on that. Can't we leave it at that for now, and then interact with the matter when we have the report before us?
So Chairperson, I agree with that summation, because, as we said, the investigations were two. In actual fact, they started at HQ to interview those that they needed to speak to. They've gone on the ground, and they are still putting their report together. So I think that we can leave it at that, and then at the time where everything is ready, then we will revert back. I would propose that we leave it at that, Chair.
Thank you so much. General Sangoni, let's leave it at that for now and take it up when we have the report before us. Okay?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, General. And then the next item, colleagues, is the consideration of, I think, the letter from the President dated 4th January on the SNDF deployment under Operation Prosper. Right.
Chairperson, are we needed for this item or we can log off?
It's you must present it, SecDef. You in fact, ordinarily the minister presents to us the lead.
Okay. Chairperson, on Operation Prosper, what I can confirm is that we had, with regards to the employment papers, we had done all our work. It was signed by all those who were supposed to sign it in the department. And that in this instance, Operation Prosper is really focusing on the deployment in support of the SAPS when it comes to the issues of the protection of critical infrastructure and the strategic road networks in KZN. That needed to be in place. And this, we have signed it and it has been forwarded to the office of the president for signature. And then it gets then transmitted directly from the presidency to parliament. So from our side, it has left the department to go to the presidency for that signature. So that is as far as Operation Prosper goes, Chairperson.
Okay. All right. Colleagues?
Chairperson?
Yes, Mr. Murray.
If I may, thank you for that. And we know what Operation Prosper is all about. What is of a bit more concern to me, and I've raised that with you, separately, and that is the Operation Vikela. We have read in the newspapers and in articles that apparently SADC has confirmed, and I have read in the Defence Web and other fora about apparently a decision that we are sending now more soldiers in. We have not received a letter in that regard, and this is quite a huge deployment, actual deployment, not just an employment, but it seems like a huge a deployment. And I have serious concerns in terms of how many soldiers are we sending in, what is the kind of support that we are providing them, will there be air support, with the Roy Fort or with from the Gripens and others. I'm very concerned that we are sending our soldiers in with their hands proverbially tied behind their backs, and like Corporal Khadebe, they will come back in body bags, and that is something that we cannot allow. We have made a decision, and we have communicated that to both the minister and the presidency sometime last year, if I'm correct, the beginning of last year, and you have even called a meeting while we were in recess when we received that letter, and I think it was beginning of last year, that we can at least consider the letter. Now we've got a situation, it's now going to March, and this current Bekela operation and approval authorization has already lapsed on the 15th of January. So we are close to 2 months or 1.5 months already. And there's no authority. Either the president hasn't applied his mind, which I doubt very much, or it is stuck somewhere. But the fact that it's nearly 2 months and it's not with us still is a major concern, and we cannot do our work properly. I don't know whether we have got proper support for our soldiers. I hope the CJ Ops is still here and he can probably give us some information. Because I'm very, 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 very concerned about this, and this is not how we support our soldiers. Thank you, Chair. Okay. Maybe, hopefully we can have some information.
All right. I don't see the hands. Colleagues, is there any hand on the screen?
you have Ryder, Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Ryder. Okay, Mr. Ryder, just hold on there. Can we process this, the letter of the 4th of January 1st? Right?
Chair, my point is on that, if I may.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, let me just summarize it. The president authorizes employment of 2,700 members of the SANDF for a service in cooperation with the South African police for the prevention and combating crime and maintenance preservation of law and order across 9 provinces of the Republic of South Africa. And the employment is authorized under the relevant sections in the Constitution and the Defense Act. And the employment is for the period from the 8th of December to the 18th December to the 18th of March. And the expenditure is 232 million rand. And that's the letter that is presented to us. Mr. Ryder?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My point is directly to this letter, but is intrinsically linked to Mr. Murray's comments as well, and they can't be separated. And if you read paragraph 201 of the Constitution, Chair, it's quite clear, and it says, if Parliament does not sit during the first 7 days after the Defence Force is employed, as envisaged, the President must provide the information required to the appropriate oversight committee. I've edited it slightly from the exact text. The point is that 7 days, if Parliament doesn't sit within 7 days, it clearly shows urgency, Chairperson. We've made the point in the past that we don't mind, as a committee, being called out of recess, being called to a special meeting over weekends or as may be deemed fit. But there are lives at stake, and without, you know, casting any doubt on the president's ability to make decisions as to whether to deploy or employ forces, this committee has a duty to those soldiers to consider these letters as a matter of urgency. To consider a letter dated the 4th of January on a date that is actually the 24th of February is not really acceptable, Chair. We're failing in our duty. And I mean, the oversight role of Parliament has been called into question on numerous occasions recently by the Constitutional Court and other members of the judiciary in various areas, including in the Zondo Commission. Parliament must do its oversight work. Chairperson, we need to have proper information about, when our soldiers are going out there. That is our role in terms of the legacy constitution and our duties laid out in that. We must look after the well-being of our soldiers. That's this community's job. So, Chair, I object to having to assent to a letter dated the 4th of January in a meeting today. I have a strong objection to that. Mr. Murray's comments about the Operation Vukela issue is as problematic. And I really think we need to, make our voices heard in some way that we can start meeting to discuss these issues with the correct information. You know, we've seen the letter, that's fantastic. We've seen the rand amount that's stated. You know, what else is being sent out to support our soldiers as we deploy them? And certainly, you know, obviously not with this particular letter, but with other places where our men and women are deployed, we need to know what support there is for them. So, Chair, I have a massive problem with the dates and the difference on the dates. We need to do this more urgently. Thank you.
So I'm sure you're not directing that to the department. You're directing it to us, the committee, isn't it?
Because certainly, Chair, but I think the department should also become with better information to back up and motivate these letters when we receive them.
No, no, no. The procedure is that they prepare a letter for the president's signature. And once the letter is with the president, it's out of their control. The president will sign the letter at a time when he is in a position to do so. I mean, he has a busy schedule. And once the president has finished signing the letter, he then dispatches it to the relevant, offices of parliament. And when parliament is not in session, he sends one to the committee. He sent one to us. He sends one to the speaker, to the chair of National Council, and the other two to the co-chair and myself. Those that are sent to the co-chair and myself are for the attention of the committee. And it was duly dispatched and circulated to all members of the committee. And the reason why we could not meet, you see, I think you must not be too hard with yourself. The reason why when the portfolio committee was able to meet much earlier, and us only started meeting last week, is because certain members of the committee, of the joint standing committee, were unavailable. Now, if members are unavailable, there is nothing. The president signs the letter on the 4th of January, and people are away. I don't want me to make people feel guilty that they were out there and having a deserved rest. So, I mean, to be honest, let's not be hard on ourselves. And it's the president was simple, just renewing the thing. If there was any issue, I always maintain this, that if you think the matter, you think it can't wait, and it's a do-or-die matter, or even if it's not a do-or-die matter, but it's a matter that can't wait, please check if we can have members who would make a quorum so that we can transact on the issue. And we started meeting from last week because members of the NSOP in particular were not back from leave, from recess as it were. So we came much earlier than them. Hence, it was possible for the portfolio committee to meet at the beginning. I think from last month we were meeting as a committee. All right, let's leave it at that, but I take note that you want me to call you from leave, and but it's fine, that is noted. Right, Mr. Shalabe, your hand is up. I've noted the issue.
But in terms of Vukela, Vukela.
We have not seen the letter on Vukela, Mr. Marais.
Exactly, and that's my concern. Is that we haven't seen a letter, and we know that on the 15th of January, it has been announced that the president is saying
yes,
that it is extended. So it should have come a week after that, and we are already 1.5 months later, and we still haven't got anything. I mean, can the CJ Ops maybe have information about the actual deployment or sector?
Can I come in?
Yeah. All right. Before you come in, SecDef, the hand of Mr. Shalembe. Let me take first. Shalembe.
Yes. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, with regard, to the deployment or employment of soldiers, to assist in terms of but Chairperson, I'm just checking what is the intention of that letter being sent, to us. Is it for noting or is it for consideration? Because we as the committee is just to say...
Mr. Daniel... Sorry, Shalabe. Mr. Daniels, can you mute your mic, please? Peter Daniels, mute your mic. Thank you. Yes, continue.
Yeah. Chairperson, just to concur, with Honorable Ryder,
the function of this committee, you know, is more for ensuring that, I mean, the country and its people, you know, are protected. So we have to be available, like, I mean, each and every hour where possible. Say, if, say, we are saying now, when you are on leave, we can't afford to attend issues. But to me now, because of this thing of the virtual platform meetings, we can afford to meet. But the question remains, Chairperson, what is the purpose of letter being tabled in front of this committee? Is it for noting or is it for consideration? If, I mean, we can agree on that, then we know that the president will do, I mean, his own things. Thereafter, say, I've done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Because now we are now like in an argument where we say, what is our role? I mean, in this scenario, Chairperson, we can't afford, I mean, to go on, take decision on a letter that is got, I mean, something hanging. Why? If, say, the president, I mean, send the letter us after 5 months of deployment, are we going to say, okay, it's fine? Or, Chairperson, I think not that much, but the availability of members is important, Chairperson, even if we are, I mean, on whatever, holidays or this and that, because the country must be defended by the same, a committee responsible, I mean, for the protection of our borders, or, I mean, assisting in terms of, assisting the police where, I mean, they are needed. In short, what is our responsibility in that letter from the president? Noting or for consideration? Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. Let's not conflict issues. There is a letter that was written to the committee on the 4th. I've asked us to process that letter first before we move to Operation Vigela letter that we have not received. SecDef is going to comment on that one. That requires him. On this one, General Sokela, how many members were, this was reduced from how many members? General Sangwen, it was reduced to 2,000 from how many members?
Chair, for the OPROSPER deployment in KZN, it was not an extension. It was a totally new operation that commenced in December. So it had up to a maximum of 2,700 soldiers available for employment.
It was a new deployment. All right, colleagues, yes, and the soldiers, I see them in the freeway and everywhere else. So, really. The net, this deployment. The constitution is very clear when we don't support the deployment. Can I have a view on that one, colleagues, so that we finish this one and then move to the...
Chair, you, we lost you now for a moment. Maybe just repeat what you have just said.
Yes. No. I was actually saying, Mr. Mare, this is a new deployment, as the chief joint has said it. It's a new 2,000 soldiers deployed to KwaZulu-Natal. I'm saying these soldiers are all over. I see them every day along the. I see some along the N3, and some in strategic areas. Supporting the police. So the question, Chair, now I have is that deployment started on the 18th of December, and the constitution is very clear if we don't support it. Do we support it or we don't support it? That was the question, Mr. Murray, I presented.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Chairperson, if I can comment on that. Obviously, we are there to support the essential deployments. I think what Honourable Ryder has also referred to, and I think the practical implications is, and the Constitution and the laws provide for that. Should we not agree with that?
Sorry, Mr. Murray. I've accepted everything he said and you said.
Yeah.
And I stated how it was not possible for us to meet earlier.
Yes. I
so I then put that aside. Yes. Now the letter, I'm presenting the letter now. The letter is presented. Do we support the deployment or we don't? That is the question. That is the thing we need now.
It's actually irrelevant whether we support it or not. We have to take notice of that. And we have to, basically take note of that, and that's it. So we are there to support our soldiers, and if it is done in the right way, obviously, you know, we note it. We must say we note the deployment and the information that was sent to us, the letter. But you know, whether we support it is actually irrelevant because they are actually nearly finished. In less than a month, they are finished. They are actually, you know, so whether we agree with that or not is irrelevant. So we have to take note of that and we have to move forward. We basically condone it. We basically condone it at this stage.
Whatever it means, it's fine. Let's leave it at that. So we have no objection, to the deployment. So that would be part of my report to Parliament. Can we then move to the next item that you introduced, Mr. Murray, the Operation Vigela, the deployment under Operation Vigela. SecDef was going to talk to it. SecDef?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think you would recall that there was the SADC Heads of State Summit around the review of the situation in Mozambique. When the summit discussed the matter, they agreed that the operation in Mozambique or the extension of summit must be done. But they didn't specify the period for extension. So from our side, when we prepared the employment papers to the CIC, is that we then had in mind that we did that, I think, late December, beginning of January, understanding that the papers, the current employment papers that helped to deploy in Mozambique were coming to an end at the end of January. So the papers were then sent, and they were all signed by the relevant people who had to sign them in the department, and those ones also were transmitted to the presidency. Maybe the undertaking we can give, Chair, is that we will follow up with the presidency and just check where it is. In the papers, we asked for extension for another period of 3 months, since summit did not express itself on the length of period.
Okay. You see, that's where Mr. Mare's issue becomes relevant. And there was an extension that happened in January. And Parliament has not been informed about it. And so are we not... I don't know. Maybe you need to inquire with the office of the president. Where is that at? And then report to us at the next meeting next week. So the deployment, the extension happened.
The extension happened, Chairperson, because at the time when we worked on it, we still had a month before the other deployment, the employment papers were going to expire. So then the new ones that say were going to kick in after the end of January, we also made them for a period of 3 months. and they are out of the system within the department and have been transmitted to the presidency.
Okay. Chairperson, my frustration is, I mean, I can tell you now the information that I've got is that Tusai is already in Mozambique, 1,000 soldiers. And there's nobody that apparently knows about that. Obviously, I know that the SECDEF must know about that. Obviously, the CJ Ops and the chief of the SNDF must know about that. There's no ways that you're going to send 1,000 soldiers of Tusai to Mozambique and nobody knows about that. So it happened. And somebody must inform us and brief us on that. And the right persons are here in the meeting. So we must know whether those soldiers are properly looked after, whether they are properly resourced, what is the dangers, what is the threats, what must we work on now to make sure that they get the support. We know what happened with Corporal Khadebe. Where is the air support? We don't know whether that's going to be there. So they are sitting ducks again. And it's now 1,000 soldiers, not just 300 like the previous time. And how many Oryx helicopters is now going to support 1,000 soldiers compared to 300? We must know these things. And I mean, it's unfair to leave us in limbo. And we must rely on own sources or on the media or on other people that might know. That's just unfair. Totally unfair.
Okay. Secretary.
I was talking to the issues of the employment papers. I didn't want to talk to the issues of operations because I thought that the opportunity was going to be given to General Sangweni to talk to that, and he's ready to do so, Chair, if we can give him the opportunity to do so.
Again, we are preempting the letter. That must be formally presented to the committee, in other words, to Parliament. Parliament has not received it. Section 201, subsection 3, it reads, when the Defence Force is employed for any purpose mentioned in subsection 2, the President must inform Parliament promptly and in an appropriate detail. The reasons for the employment, 2, any place where the force is being employed, 3, the number of people involved, and 4, the period for which the force is expected to be employed. And then subsection 4, it says, if Parliament does not sit during the first 7 days after the defence is employed, as envisaged in subsection 2, the President must provide the information required in subsection 3 to the appropriate oversight committee. Let's leave it at that. I was just reading the section for the record. I'm sure we're all aware of it. Let's leave it at that. We don't have the letter, and we can't take the presentation outside the letter. So, colleagues, maybe let's request the DM is in the meeting. The DM to try and escalate this to the minister. The minister will see what she does about it. DM?
Chairperson, can I just mention, I mean, surely the CJ Ops can brief us on whether there has been a deployment and whether our soldiers are properly looked after in terms of resources. Because as I've said, I mean, I can give you the information. I can tell you how many from parachutes are there, how many from the Pathfinders, Spionkov is going there, Mikado is going there. So they are there.
No, Chair, that's great. Sorry, Chair.
Can we
respectfully what is the point, by the way? Intervene, Chair. On this matter. Yes. No, Chair, the anxiety expressed by Honorable Mare with respect to the scanty information
the committee has around the deployment in the Cabo Delgado is respected and appreciated. However, I would, it's a personal, you know, view, Chair, that the Joint Standing Committee on Defense may actually take a briefing on the deployment with respect to a whole host of issues that the oversight should satisfy itself that the deployment has taken into consideration everything else that must be taken into account. I'm just weary that the information the honorable member is bringing up may actually be in part unintentionally compromising the deployment there. That's the side, that's the one point. But the other point, Chair, I was agreeing with you that with respect to the absence of the deployment letters before Parliament, it is a matter that I'll undertake to bring to the urgent attention of the Minister that there is concern by the Joint Standing Committee on Defense that such procedural matters seem to have been, you know, overlooked. That's what I was going to say, Chair, in relation to this. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I also consider it as an oversight. Let's have the matter deferred to the next meeting, where we receive a report from the minister on when we will receive the letter from the president. If the letter will be available by then, the minister will then be afforded the opportunity to present it and then take the discussion up there. In other words, let's properly atomize it on the agenda. I don't want us to discuss a matter that is not on the agenda and in a piecemeal motion when it is yet to serve before us. Mr. Murray, can we postpone this to the next meeting, please?
Chairperson, surely, I mean, I think none of us are unreasonable. But this was just the first opportunity, and it was also the right forum where to raise it. Joint Standing Committee on Defense, and with the Chief available, with the SecDef, with the Deputy Minister, with CJ Ops. So we want to play that role in support of our soldiers, and we need to be fully involved. Otherwise, our hands are then tied. If they are not playing the game with us. So I've got no problem, and especially as the Deputy Minister has now suggested, that hopefully within days or the next week, we will get an opportunity where they will brief us on where we stand. Because as I've said to you, and I want to say to the Deputy Minister, the information that I've now given, that's out there. So it's not me disclosing that. It's already out there. And everybody knows about that. So there's no secrets about that. And my problem is that we, the oversight body, we don't know about that. Officially. We don't officially know about it.
Right.
Thank you. But, thank you very much. Much appreciated.
Thanks. So it will be, placed on the agenda of the next State Joint Standing Committee of Defense. Colleagues, I'm worried about time. We've gone over time by 38 minutes, way over time. So we have two items.
We don't get over time. We don't get quite over time anyways. We don't get quite over time.
Okay, may I suggest that you send this item till next week, colleagues, these two items. Peter, will you dye the trenches?
No, Chair, I'm up just to before the end of this term.
Come again?
Hello, Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, Peter?
Hi, yes. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Now, just with regards to the review, we'll just try to do it within this first quarter, Chair. Thank you.
No, it's fine. No, thank you so much. So those two items, the annual business plan as well as the minutes, would stand, those two items stand down until the next week. Let me thank the SecDef, and sorry, let me thank the minister, deputy minister, and the SecDef and the chief joints and other colleagues who are in the meeting, and then call it a quit. I think we have exhausted the issue. For now, honorable members, I thank all of you. Let's meet again next week.
Thank you, Chair. Go see.
Hi, Kenny. How's you, Kenny? Oh.